Brighton Street.
That's the one we're at now.
Well, I've gone on the one that we have to.
Oh, it's way bigger.
No, we're gonna start calling.
No, I say it every year, I say that we're doing a unit there. It's a, and I say I wanna do more, and this time, we've done a road trip in there, we really like to travel.
Good evening, we'll be calling the meeting to order shortly, if you'd find a seat. Welcome, we'll call our city council meeting to order, and we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance by Councilwoman Moreno.
Please join me in the pledge to our flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Here.
Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Kelly?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Here.
Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. First agenda item is approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant, seconded by Councilwoman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. First item on our agenda is a presentation. I've asked Councilwoman Fonzie to take the lead.
Thank you. The City of Atascadero would like to designate the month of May as Ehlers-Danlos Syndrome Awareness Month. And I'm going to read just a few things about this syndrome so that you know what it is. I didn't know what it was until very recently. Whereas Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, known as EDS, is a group of inherited disorders characterized by excessive instability of the joints, fragile and hyperelastic skin that bruises, scars, and tears easily, and organ. EDS National Foundation affirms its commitment to these important issues by declaring May 2013 as Ehlers-Danlos Syndrome Month in Atascadero. And further be it resolved that the City of Atascadero recognizes and commends the talents, abilities, and contributions of the individuals in our community diagnosed with EDS. And be it further resolved that the City of Atascadero recognizes and commends the parents and relatives of individuals with EDS, the professionals that provide value services, and the EDS National Foundation for their sacrifice and dedication in providing for the special needs of persons with EDS. Thank you.
Thank you. And we do have Christina Reitmer here this evening to receive this, but if you would take just a moment, I have another special guest here, Kevin Drabinski from Kacho Ashajian's office in the Assembly, also has some words to say on this item.
Members, it's my pleasure to be here on behalf of your State Assemblyman Kacho Ashajian and to present a certificate of recognition to Christina Reitmer for her advocacy in raising awareness around Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Once in a while, too infrequently in politics, you come across people who are passionate and do their work with integrity in a completely selfless fashion. Christina has done that. We were unable to get a state resolution to this effect. We're going to work on it for next year. We applaud your work. All politics is local. We'll speak of this syndrome among our family and friends and health professionals. That'll achieve the same goal of raising awareness. And we'd like to give this certificate of recognition to Christina Reitmer to this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't we ask Christina to come forward and receive that from you and then share some words, and then we may join together for all of us together.
City Council members of the community as well. The only people that I know of in our county with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is both myself and my son. And it's impacted me where I can't really work too much anymore. and I'd love to be able to work, but this here disorder takes years before people can even get a diagnosis because doctors aren't really taught and educated on it. And actually, the prevalency of we don't have pain that we deal with, even though the pain is different from day to day, we can have good periods and bad periods, but we also learn to deal with our disorder and learn to educate ourselves and also have a community where we support each other online. And for those of us who can try to get together, we try to meet up if we're going to an area that we know that there are others. It's just that, you know, there's also a lot of kids out there that have this disorder who I'd also like to see the school districts have the PE teachers taught to look for hypermobility or some of the other symptoms in childhood so that these kids can then be diagnosed sooner so that way they can have less of a chance of having more of a disability in life so that they can take steps to protect their joints and tissues and connective tissues and stuff like that. So if anything does happen with them where they might need surgery, it can be done differently than for someone else who does not have the disorder. I, again, thank you all very much for making May Ehlers-Danlos Syndrome Awareness Month.
Well, thank you, and thank you for being here and representing this and your family. We'd like to invite you and your son to come forward along with Kevin. We do have the newspaper here, and maybe we can, the council can go forward and join in. And I'll let you, we can go, let's go around and you'll present this. And your family for being an advocate and helping educate our community on this area. I do want to jump back to having a report on our closed session that we had. Is there anything to report from that, our city attorney?
There's nothing to report.
Thank you. We have another proclamation. Is Kevin Klein here? I don't see Kevin Klein. Anybody here like to ride bicycles? Because it's Bicycle Month, and we do have a proclamation regarding that. And I'm not going to read it in detail, unless Kevin happens to show up here very soon. But we're going to celebrate Bike Month with our own event, Cycle de Mayo, which will occur on the Saturday before Cinco de Mayo. And we will be having joining the Atascadero Bike Club and young families riding around the Atascadero Lake. And we will have a couple of live mariachi bands playing and some authentic Mexican food afterwards. So it will truly be a fun experience. We've tried to make our Bike Month events an educational experience for young children, especially emphasizing safety and just a family activity together. But all of Bike Month does encourage folks to get out and ride that bike. I know Councilman Clay has done that quite a bit and has helped us in the past on that. So be aware, May is Bike Month, and we'll hand this proclamation to the appropriate folks in the future. Next on our agenda, I believe we're going to go ahead with the life-saving awards because all of the folks are here. We'll just follow the agenda. And that will be done by Chief Haley.
Mr. Mayor and Council, thank you very much for allowing me to present these awards in front of you tonight. I apologize in advance for a little bit of gravel in my voice, and I won't do a lot of handshaking tonight. But other than that, we would like to recognize a couple of different incidents and several officers that participated in those two incidents. Said before, I'll say again, the fire department has a little more opportunity than we do to participate in some life-saving efforts on behalf of members and residents of Atascadero, members of our community and residents of Atascadero. We get fewer opportunities in the police department to do so, and so we recognize those events of a special nature with an award. Our department, congratulations, by the way. Okay. Just a little bit about this incident. February 10th of 2013, Officer Netz was dispatched to an emergency call at one of our local health clubs. When she arrived, she found a patient that was in distress and ultimately deployed our automated external defibrillators that we have been assigned to each of our units. We've used them several times since being assigned those units, and they have come in not only very handy, I think that understates it dramatically. They have absolutely saved lives on more than one occasion now. This was no exception. Officer Netz found the patient and applied the AED device, and certainly doing so led to a situation where the patient's heart rhythm was brought back into a life-saving rhythm as a result of that. And that's what she was written up for. I'll read just a little bit about that. Officer Netz located the victim, found the victim had no pulse, and deployed the automated external defibrillator. The device showed that the victim was in some sort of cardiac distress and immediately delivered an electric shock. Officer Netz then started CPR on the victim and continued until the arrival of Atascadero Fire Department and San Luis Ambulance personnel. The victim was later transported to the hospital and I hear is in the audience tonight. And so thank you very much for being here. So we do want to recognize Officer Netz for her life-saving efforts on behalf of the victim in that case, and want to present her with the award, which consists of a medal, a certificate, and in a ribbon that would be worn on her Class A uniforms. The victim in this case also happened to be the parent of one of our firefighters, and the efforts of the firefighter on his behalf should not be understated as well. I think that a combined effort on the part of both departments really did lead to the saving of a life, and so we're grateful to have you here tonight to be in support of this. So. I'm gonna stay way away, but hit you with a ribbon.
Thank you.
No. Her one opportunity to speak, and she says nothing. Okay, we'll let her stand back. Was just going out to his mailbox. And as he was going out to his mailbox, he saw someone laying in the street. I don't know whether you've ever gone out to get mail and seen somebody just laying there, but it was certainly disconcerting for him. They happened to be doing road work nearby his residence, and one of the flag persons had succumbed to a cardiac incident and had fallen down in the middle of the street. Joe immediately began conducting CPR, and provided some life-saving measures. Our officers arrived, and shortly thereafter, again, deployed the AED device. And so I'm going to invite those other officers up. Corporal John Taylor is here today. Corporal Matt Chesson is here today, and Officer Chris Hall. Can you guys join me up here, please? They are a fine-looking crew. Just a little bit about this incident. After the victim was found unresponsive and Commander Allen started CPR, he called the Atascadero Dispatch Center and requested additional assistance. While he continued CPR, our officers began arriving on scene. Corporal Taylor deployed the AED device, showed that the victim in this case was in a cardiac distress and delivered an electric shock. Corporal Chesson and Officer Hall arrived very shortly thereafter and began taking over for CPR. on a now very tired Joe Allen. Once they took over, the fire department and ambulance company responded and were able to transport the patient to the hospital where he was able to recover from his cardiac incident. And so we are very grateful again for the efforts of Commander Allen, who is not here. We'll recognize him at a different time, but tonight we'll recognize John Taylor, Matt Chesson, and Chris All for their efforts. We'll be presenting each of them with a certificate, and if you would like to take photographs with them, we can make that happen. Would any of you like to say anything? Stone faces. Oh, my goodness. All right.
Mayor and Council, we have great employees, and I really appreciate these opportunities that we have to recognize them. It's just unbelievable the fantastic things from life safety or life saving to a variety of programs and projects and services that these employees render. We have a truly remarkable bunch. Two people I'd like to recognize tonight. First, Scott Pippen, our police corporal, been with us 10 years now. Man, it just seems like Scott joined us not too long ago. Corporal Pippen has served the community in a variety of capacities, as we all know. He's been instrumental. He was the lead, I think, in developing the police motorcycle program. He was also the driving force behind what we call the Volunteer King program. The King units are the very dedicated volunteers who assist patrol traffic, investigations, traffic details, and other support functions. Scott's also served on the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department SWAT team. He's been a special enforcement team member at the APD, and he's currently the property crimes detective. He was elected the Police Association president over a year ago, and he continues in that to be the lead of that organization, and I get to see him regularly. Corporal Pippen also trying to gather some momentum for creating the PAL, or the Police Athletic League, and will provide healthy activities for Atascadero's youth. Coming this June, Scott plans to marry his fiancée, Amanda. I was trying to get him to schedule negotiations on that day. He wouldn't do it. But congratulations for your service, Scott, and thank you so much. Where are you? Come on down here.
Direction of the department as well as what's happening. So, again, I look forward to the next 10 years, 11 and a half to be exact, and I'm gone. But thank you.
This next one comes at probably a perfect time or a great week for events. We want to recognize our own city attorney, Brian Pirick, for now 5 years of service with the city. Since 2007, when the city council awarded the contract to Burke Williams Sorensen, Brian has been our city attorney. He's based in the Camarillo office, and in addition to Atascadero, he serves as special counsel to over 30 cities, as well as other public agencies, including counties, school districts, water districts, special agencies. He's advised public agencies on a wide variety of topics, He's one of the go-to city attorneys in the state. Many of us have known Brian for many years because he is one of those attorneys that that does special work and has a real passion for local government. We're glad to have Brian here. I can't tell you how many things, especially from a department head level, that we're excited about the things that Brian's brought. And while in the early years he had a lot of work to bring us up to par, we really embraced Brian as a team member, and we're certainly glad to have him on board. And it didn't hurt any that he had a victory this week. So welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, everyone. Being a lawyer, I guess I should make up for everybody else that's had limited comments, so I should have about... This should take no longer than an hour, I promise. I just want to thank you all for your confidence in me, and I appreciate working with the council, city manager and staff, department heads, and I think you got a great city. I've worked with a lot of cities, and yours is certainly one of the best. It's a well-run city. The residents are very supportive of the city, and I look forward to continuing to provide you with good service. So thank you very much.
Scott, do a quick
Thank you. It's always good to recognize not only our own employees, but members of our community. Well, we're going to say welcome.
I'm very sorry.
You darn well should be. Were you riding your bike here tonight?
I did not, but then May is Bike Month. My name is Kenny, and I'm here on behalf of Rideshare and also the Regional Transit Authority in San Luis Obispo, or South County Area Transit. So I just have a few words. I'm sorry I missed the proclamation.
We'll welcome your words.
Okay, thank you. It's all positive. So May is Bike Month. Please ride your bike. It's very healthy. It'll do wonders for you. And we hope that you enjoy all the bike paths in Atascadero and on the North Coast. And that's pretty much all I have to say for Rideshare. If you want anything more about it, you can go to rideshare.org. As far as the Regional Transit Authority goes, we have a lot going on. We have the North County Beach Shuttle, which starts in June, and it includes three stops in Atascadero, which will take you to, well, actually, it serves Atascadero, Templeton, and Paso Robles. And it'll take you to Cayucas three times a day and take you back, starting in June. And there's three stops in Atascadero, North Del Rio to downtown, or North Atascadero to Del Rio Avenue, I believe, between Del Rio Road and downtown Atascadero. So that'll start in June. We also have, the Regional Transit Authority has the Youth Ride Free program, where anybody this summer with valid student ID through 12th grade can ride for free. So you guys can, if you know somebody that's younger or somebody still involved in the educational system that has student ID, they can become the county's new explorers. We also have, there'll be mobile office hours for the executive director, Jeff Straw. He'll be riding the buses to take your suggestions and comments in about 2 months. And that's pretty much all I have. So please ride your bike and enjoy Rideshare. And it's rideshare.org. And if you have any questions about the Regional Transit Authority, that's Florida.org. And thank you. And I'm
very good fish and chips establishments all around Atascadero. And I think it'd be great for Morro Bay residents to come on over and taste Atascadero fish and chips for a change.
I think it'll be full both ways.
Absolutely.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now move on our agenda to next item, which is the consent calendar. They are soon to be items fairly routine. We do give everyone an opportunity to pull an item if they have any questions, either a member of the public or a member of council.
I would like to pull items 1 and 2, please.
Items 1 and 2, very good.
I'd like to pull item 4.
And item 4. Well, that leaves us item 3, 5, and 6 available for a motion.
Or just
well, I think we could go ahead with the consent calendar items. No one offered to share on the consent calendar items.
Then I will move approval of items 3, 5, and 6 on the consent calendar.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No? I think we're done. Okay. Let's go back to item. Oh, well. Do we need a roll call on that?
We normally would do that.
I got so excited about the bus ride to Morro Bay, it's completely thrown me off. Well, let's try that again.
I have Councilmember Moreno making the motion and Councilmember Kelly seconding. And roll call is Councilmember Moreno.
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Very good. Now we'll try this again.
Let's try
item
again.
Number 1.
Well, I pulled 1 and 2 because I was not present for the April 9th meeting, so I just did not want to. I'm going to abstain from voting on 1 and 2, so I just wanted to pull those out just to be separate and make sure everything's just clear in the record that way.
Very good. And I will abstain from item 2 as I step down on that particular item.
I'll make a motion that we approve item 1 and 2 with Tom abstaining from number 2.
Second that, and Brian from 1 and 2.
Yes. Very good. We have a motion by Councilman Kelly. And who made the second on that? Councilman Moreno. Okay, roll call.
Councilman.
Yeah, Councilmember Fonzie, it's been weed and refuse. Refuse, as described in the municipal code, is means waste matter, appliances, abandoned automobiles, junk, litter, trash, debris, dirt, cut vegetation, growth, dead trees, things of that nature is without going through the entire list, that creates a health and safety issue to the welfare of the public. Typically, we go about abating that through letters, a process of, you know, letting the property owners abate that and get rid of it and proceeding to, you know, citations and or court action if necessary.
Very good. And could you just give an update? I hear this will be a bad fire year, predictably. Is that something that you're anticipating?
Well, as I've over the past 22 years been in the fire service, I always tell everybody I'll tell you in December. But it does look like a dry season. We do definitely have some early drying of grass and vegetation out there. Some of the moisture levels in some of the vegetation are the lowest we've seen, especially this early in the year, for sure. So we do want to remind everybody, be very, very cautious, be very, very fire safe out there, especially when you're doing your weed abatement.
Very good. Thank you. I'd like to make a motion to approve item A4.
Could I have a question?
Yes, go ahead, Bob.
In regards to the refuse that you mentioned, like appliances and what have you, will that be handled the same way as the weeds, that if they're not in compliance, that a contractor will be hired by the city to clean some of these messes up we have around town?
Yeah, correct. Basically, what we do on the weed abatement program, these are refuse issues that are brought or that we drive by and see as we're doing the weed abatement program. Typically, every year, we only see one, maybe two, that are included in this program. Most of the other time, they're brought forth on a code enforcement violation issue.
So if they are identified in this program, they'll get cleaned up by a contractor?
Correct.
Thank you.
Very good. I made a motion that we approve item A4. Do we have a second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Did we complete all of the consent calendar items? Good. Okay. We're now moving.
6th of 2012. In August of 2012, there was the what's called a petition for a writ of mandate was filed by the Save Atascadero group alleging that the city had not complied with the requirements of a law under CEQA. That case was then briefed extensively by the parties, including the Save Atascadero group as well as the city and the Walmart group. And we eventually had our trial on the petition that was held on March 19th in Paso Robles before Judge Crawford. The attorneys for Save Atascadero argued their case. I was present and argued the case for the city. Jennifer Gunther argued the case for Walmart. At the end of the trial, the Judge Crawford took the case under submission. During the argument on the case, I presented multiple arguments as to why the project was one that we thought would be very beneficial to the city in terms of providing jobs, both temporary jobs, construction jobs, permanent jobs, working at the store. It would provide housing opportunities both at the Walmart and the annex site, that Walmart would be providing an anchor tenant for the city that would help stimulate economic development, and all of the other project benefits that the council found back in June of last year. So those were some of the arguments. There were also arguments presented with respect to air quality issues as well as traffic issues. All those arguments were presented, and as I indicated, Judge Crawford took the case under submission. Eventually, after 30 days, there was a lot of obviously information for the court to absorb and to review. We did receive a very detailed written tentative decision from the judge, 16 pages long. It was dated about 30 days from the date of submission. So it was dated April 19th. We received it yesterday afternoon, as a matter of fact. And I'm pleased to report that the tentative decision by Judge Crawford is that the city did act properly in approving the project, that you did comply with all applicable CEQA laws and other laws, and you did proceed in the manner required by law. I emphasize that this is a tentative decision at this point. The judge ordered that respondent, which is the city, which is me, are supposed to file what's called a proposed statement of decision, which will be submitted. We have 30 days to submit that. I anticipate we'll be doing it much quicker than that.
And it was a very long process.
Thank you.
Let me move on to the historic City Hall. These are some great events going on. As you know, we're getting close with the City Hall project. So we're going to have a grand opening preview, the Elegant Evening at the Rotunda, scheduled for August 2nd at 6 p.m. It's going to be a unique opportunity to experience City Hall before furniture's moved in. There'll be a progressive, heavy appetizers menu with each course in a different wing of the building and desserts in the upper rotunda. There will be a silent auction, wine, beer, and signature cocktails. It's a fundraising event for the Fountain Restoration Project. Tickets are priced at $100 per person. A grand opening open house is scheduled for August 20th between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. We'll be moved in, and all the departments will be open, showing what we do where in the building, how you get around the building. The ribbon cutting and grand opening ceremonies will actually start at 10, and then we'll have self-guided tours throughout the day. We're also, as I mentioned, working on the fountain restoration project to restore the four fountains. It'll cost $180,000. Finance is working on a grant in hopes of partially covering the project. The original detailed artwork will be replicated. Personalized bricks are still available. Engraved pavers will be beautifully incorporated into the landscape around the fountains and help restore those fountains. Order forms are available at City Hall, and to be part of the first project, you have to be in by June 1st. Orders accepted after June 1st will be placed annually thereafter to continue the fundraising for the projects. A little update on the Hoff property. Larry Weissong has entered into an agreement with the property owners to process a master plan for the Hoff property in ECR. consistent with the incentives that that you had reviewed before. We're reviewing the site plan and working to get that project through a conditional use permit application process. I wanted to point out, between meetings, between this meeting and next, the National Travel and Tourism Week is May 4th to May 12th, so we'll miss it with a council meeting. It's the first full week of May, and it's annually recognized by the National Travel and Tourism Week. It was a tradition first established in 1984 by Ronald Reagan out over the park. Advance purchase of admission tickets are priced at $20, which includes music, wine, and appetizers. At the door, the price will be $22. It's an adults-only event, and the zoo will be open for tourists, so we can see a special look at the zoo in the evening, and it's a really great opportunity. I also wanted to point out that the cookie adventure at Charles Paddock Zoo is Sunday, May 12th from 11 to 3. Little news, we reviewed the consolidation of the fixed route transit service a couple of meetings ago here. The City Council approved a 55% share of the savings to go to Atascadero, 45% to Paso Robles. The Paso Robles City Council at their last meeting agreed to that split. So we're one step further to the consolidation plan, and certainly a good job by council on those fund savings. I also last want to point out on your warrant register this evening, not necessarily good news, but there was a check for $7 million that we sent on to the county. It was our latest in disbursements from the RDA that we sent to the county. Our auditors have performed the due diligence review and other funds in order to determine how much the RDA had on hand that was not encumbered. And once the state approved the audit, we were required to submit those funds. So we're staying current and appropriate with all of the RDA actions, but it was a little painful to send the $7 million down to the county. That's my report.
Thank you. Next on our agenda is community forum, an opportunity for anyone in the community to talk on any item that's not on the agenda, up to 3 minutes. So please come forward and state your name. Welcome.
Well, welcome. My name's Jerry Clay, 7285 Sycamore Road. And what I come here today for was to talk about the 4th of July celebration. It is a family celebration, a non-alcoholic event, and it looked like it might be going down the tubes, but I was in town, and Andy McMean flagged me down and said, hey, I'll get that carousel there if I have to bring it in the back of my car. And I'm thinking, wow, you know. And then the same day I saw Frank Remke, and he said, hey, you got that free movie on 4th of July. So I thought that was great. And I talked to Bob, and I said, hey, we got to do this, the bouncy houses and so on. And also the zoo will be free like it was last year. We had nearly 2,000 people go through the zoo last year. And it really helps because once a kid goes through that zoo, you know 2 months later he's going to say, hey, to his grandma or something, hey, let's go back and see that zoo again. You know, I'm bored and all that kind of stuff. So, again, we're not going to reinvent the wheel. And maybe Bob could expand on this a little bit because I'm sure you're going to miss something. But the Elks train will be there. We'll probably cut it off at 4 o'clock because from 4 to 7 last year there wasn't a whole lot going on. And hopefully all the council was involved last year. I talked to Tom O'Malley. He said, hey, I ain't eating those pies this year. I don't want nothing to do with it. But he said, I will sponsor something. So, Tom, I'd like to have you sponsor the pie-eating contest and, do that for us. And I think it would be you got experience in that area, right, Tom?
Well, somebody's got to pay for the zoo admission that you just gave away. So we might have to talk about that.
Actually, it'll pay for itself because, we've got a good deal.
A good deal coming.
I'll explain to you how it'll pay for itself actually make us money afterwards, Tom. But anyway, so that's where we're at. Tom and I are working on it. The Atascadero News is did a bang up job last year, and they're willing to really help us out this year with advertisement and so on. I know Bob met with them, and he can say a little more on that. So we're going to have a bang-up day, and we're going to have a lot of fun, and it's going to be a family day, and Brian was involved last year all day long, and we appreciate that, Brian. And so the entire city council last year was involved, and that's the buzzer. And I want to just say that our city attorney did a heck of a job at that Walmart hearing, and that's one of the reasons that he did an outstanding job. Brian, you did a great job. So anyway, help us out, folks, and add on to it, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Jerry, you did a real good job there, as usual. Brian stepped up to the plate and sent me an email the other day that he will help again. And I know last year everybody helped, and I'm sure if time is available that the city council will be able to step in. It's a great family event for the community. I think one of the things Jerry didn't point out is we're going to try to get the marathon run in place again. Joe's little train from the Elks will be there. And I think we have a couple food concessions that we're working on. I think hopefully in another week we'll be a little more firm on exactly what we'll have lined up. So I think at the next city council meeting we'll be able to give you
project. And why don't we, instead of having that part of public forum, let's just add under council announcements, we'll just do a little 4th of July section, Bob, and because there's not a lot of time coming up, we'll just kind of get a little update each council meeting, and we'll just
Slip it in there somewhere, don't
worry. Yeah, well, we'll just make sure it's right on there, and then we won't take up public comment time, but we'll get a report every meeting. Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening. Linda Hendy, Atascadero Chamber of Commerce, and also the Centennial Committee. I'll make mine very brief. I just hope everybody noticed the beautiful banners that went up downtown, inviting everybody to celebrate the centennial for Atascadero. And also for upcoming events, we have Atascadero website for atascaderocentennial.com. Up-to-date information. We keep that updated every single day. A lot of wonderful events that are coming up. I know we have a pageant and several events that are the home tour and things that they're going to mention next, but we'd like to keep the community up-to-date on all the centennial opportunities that are happening, and we look forward to our Colony Days, which will be the grand celebration that we have in October. So thank you very much, and visit the website.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker. Now, I think we have an overhead item that we can get back up about a historical society event coming up here. Welcome, Mr. Lewis.
Good evening. Tom Lewis, Atascadero Historical Society, and happy centennial year and two centennial events, the annual Colony Home Tour, which is this Saturday, and we've got 8 homes this year. It'd be a great event. We are extending the hours from 11 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon to accommodate people to see all the homes. And of course, it's followed by a reception at the Colony Museum afterwards from 4 to 5. Also, tomorrow night, the film E.G. Lewis, Life of a Visionary, is playing right next door at the Galaxy Theater at 7 p.m. for $7 admission, and tickets can be purchased at the Chamber and also at the Colony Museum, which is open tomorrow from 1 to 4. It's a great opportunity. The film is a great opportunity for people who aren't that familiar with E.G. Lewis or perhaps think they are. There's so much to know about him that people really would find interesting. The movie starts, it's only an hour long. It starts with the founding of University City, the American Women's League, and American Women's Reprieve. And, of course, he was exonerated, but did lose his empire. A lot of fascinating facts there. We look forward to seeing you there and appreciate your support. All proceeds for the events do go to our museum effort and displays that are going back into Historic City Hall. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Welcome. Next speaker.
Hi. I'm Tom Lewis, and now I'm wearing a different hat. I'm here as mortgage loan officer for Heritage Oaks Bank, and I just wanted to let you know that USDA has adopted the 2010 census for who they include and who they don't include community-wise for USDA loans, which is, of course, a great source of financing for moderate-cost and low-cost housing. And that new map will be adopted officially on October 1st of this year. So anybody that is applying to purchase a home with USDA financing, within the city limits of Atascadero will have to have their commitment from USDA by that date. However, also in the census, Atascadero does fall within the parameters, as it has before, that its population is under the threshold that it can apply again for an exception and be included once again for USDA financing within the city limits. Very good program. Encourage that the city look into that. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Jim Shannon, Atascadero. What a good evening now to see all that life-saving work by the police department, their guys, and the fire department, all that. And the thing about that, too, there's homegrown guys in the police department, fire department, even on our road maintenance guys. So it's a great community to live in. And you know, I just want to thank the city for the work they did on the transit center here, you know, working with the Kiwanis on the bandstand and all that. It's really tying in nicely. Also, the work you did around the fencing around Alvord Field. You know, that corner is really being tidied nicely, even with the sign that's being done for the Veterans Memorial. So it's funny, I don't see the New Times here covering any of that good stuff like that. Unfortunately, they did a hit piece on us, as a lot of you have seen, with the help of one of our planning commissioners. That's unfortunate. But we'll let them have their day of darkness. That's okay. I'd just like to throw out there, too, with the transit center being done and the memorial clue where they're, or put money where their words are, groups like that can get together. Maybe even the Native Tree Association here at Atascadero, when it comes to all the shrubbery and stuff we want to put in to finalize all that. But I would think that would be a great idea, a great project, somehow that we could work together as a community with the city and different groups to do that. I mean, I know we have the next phase of the Colony Square that's going to be happening, and we need to get that done. You know, it would be a great way to tie in the downtown with this area here, and we have that beautiful transit center. Just be a good thing, and you know, maybe there's a group out there, maybe the Kiwanis, maybe I don't know. There's a lot of people in this community that could step up and help do that. I mean, I don't know anything about that, but I'd love to be part of it if that could happen. You know, I don't know what city staff has any ideas, if it's been mentioned. I think I talked to Jerry Clay about it a while back, and he said that was mentioned at one time. But there's a lot of good things going on in this community, and I'm proud of it. And again, it's unfortunate that people that sit on our planning commission and our past city councils are supposed to be there to help this community and move it forward, but are part of negativity. And I don't know if it's something to build up their own egos or whatever. I don't know what it is, but it's not very becoming of them. And I wish they had realized what they're really there in those positions for. So thank you for the time, and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other speakers during public comment? Welcome once again.
Hi. My name is Christina Reitmer, and I'm here in Atascadero. I just like to bring to the City Council's awareness is that in the city of Atascadero, there's very limited cab service. So I would like to see that kind of be brought in so people can have the chance to be able to go more places in the evening, especially those with us with disabilities who can't walk very far. I know that we have the shuttle and the RTA, but where I live, it's 2 miles off El Camino Real. So I would like to see, you know, more cab service available. And also possibly, I don't know if it's a way, is to also for those with disabilities, is maybe have sort of a prorated rate for the cab service, so it's not quite as expensive to go places for those of us who don't drive. Because I know the city of Templeton has that, where the residents of Templeton, a lot of these special events that are held on weekends. So that's just something I'd like to bring to the attention that is an unserved area that we have in our area. And I thank you guys very much for hearing that.
Thank you. And if you would be sure to, do you have access to email? If you would send an email to our city clerk, I think we might be able to get some information to you. Go ahead and have a seat. I don't want to hold you up, but I'll comment a little bit about that after we close public comment. Are there any other members of the public? Welcome.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. My name is John Olson. My wife and I, my daughter, moved here about 7 months ago when we purchased a property called the San Palo Inn, which is a bunch of 11 cottages just south of the Kentucky Fried Chicken on San Palo Road. It's now called the Atascadero Mission Cottages. I heard from Mr. Frace a few weeks ago that there was something being considered, and I don't really understand the process yet. The Atascadero Tourism Business Improvement District. I don't understand the process in the sense, I don't know where this is at with you folks here. I just caught wind of it on your website and reading about the agenda, and I don't understand the difference between consent calendar items and whether this is too late, whether the whole issue's done or whether I'm in the ninth inning here. In my 7 months being here, my observation is that Atascadero is not a tourism town. There's not very many tourism features here. Maybe I'm missing something, but relative to the other cities surrounding us, whether it's Paso Robles to the north and all the events they have there, a lot of them around wine and art, or San Luis Obispo and all the beach cities, you all know them probably way better than me. I get a call for a room at my property less than once a week for somebody that wants to stay for one night maximum. I've had two occasions in the 7 months I've been here where I've had guests that wanted to stay for two nights on the weekend only, and they left after one night telling me that they thought I had a fantastic little place and they were really comfortable and liked it, but there was nothing to do in Atascadero, and they moved on. Most of the guests are just passing through town for one night. In one curious occasion, they wanted a room for 4 hours. That's as good as it gets for my business up there. They didn't stay there, by the way. But this Tourism Business Improvement District, if tourism gets boosted somehow here, I don't know how to do that. I could propose some ideas. But it's not like build hotels and collect tax and that makes tourism. It's not build a hotel and they will come. First of all, but the restaurants benefit. Are we charging the restaurants for, improving tourism? What happened up at Lake Tahoe is that the whole tax scenario. Oh, sorry. Thank you.
I would suggest you get in touch with the Chamber of Commerce. Sir, Linda Hendy here in the back, she might be able to get you hooked up with some of the folks that are in the T-Bid organization. Again, this is something brought to the city by the hoteliers primarily. It's something that's driven by the industry. But if you're not able to get all of your questions answered through that avenue, fire an email to our city clerk and we can get you some updated information. And welcome to our community, the heart of the Central Coast, the future of tourism in the Central California. Thank you. I did want to respond to you, ma'am. The Regional Transportation Authority does work with the transportation throughout the county, and I think in some areas they do subsidize for accessibility needs, and we might be able to get some information there. I was going to also see if the Chamber of Commerce might be able to help with any of the private sector. We do have any of the taxis or private transportation might be able to be found out through the Chamber of Commerce. But I think we could follow up with you on what's available with our Dial-A-Ride in our community and other things that might be ADA accessible. So if you'd like, just send an email to our city clerk or myself, tomalley@atascadero.org. I'll follow up with that organization and see if I can get you some information. Yeah, we'll have to take that up outside of the meeting, as we don't have as much time to dialogue normally at a meeting. But I'll see what we can find out. Thank you. Oh, yes. Okay. Well, first, let me see. I think we have no other speakers coming forward for public comments. So
won the FIRST Los Angeles Regional, securing themselves a spot at the World Championships in St. Louis, which starts tomorrow, April 24th. The Graybots won the World Championship in 2011 and defended its title in 2012. So what will happen in 2013? Well, they're on their way, and they're looking for our support. They really do need our support. They have done this on a shoestring budget, and it's amazing that we have an amazing group of kids and a talented group of kids with as little resources as they've had have pulled off these wins and just did an incredible, it just speaks of their ingenuity, their talent, and their passion. So I would like to challenge you. I'm going to send them a check either tonight or tomorrow. I'm going to send it, and what I would ask you to do is for us as a community to step up and help show these kids how proud we are of them, that they're shining Tascadero out there in a real positive light, and let's just show that we're standing behind them. And what you can do is you can make a tax-deductible contribution and make it out to a Tascadero Education Foundation, and you send that to P.O. Box 642, Tascadero 93423. And if you have any questions, you can always call me, or you can, and my number is 550-6814, or actually you can call, well, we'll leave it at that. So remember, P.O. Box 642, Atascadero, 93423, made out to Atascadero Education Foundation. Let's support our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, and maybe they can get a second world championship. Well on their way this time. Well, it was a little unusual meeting tonight because we had so many community activities and recognitions to make, but we just appreciate that about our community. It's a great place to live and very much a lot of community involvement. We're now going to move on to our business items. We have a number of items to address tonight. The first was a management report on the partnership between the city and the Historical Society. And I believe our city manager has that.
It's going to be done by my assistant, Marcia Torgerson.
Well, very good. Take it away, Marcia.
Thank you. Yes, this is about the partnership, and we're excited about bringing this to you. The Historical Society and city staff have been working on a variety of things, including this, for a long time, and we're excited to be bringing this to you. First of all, the recommendation in the staff report, kind of lengthy, but it says that you would like to authorize the city. So let me briefly give you a real brief timeline. 1993 is when this lease that the Historical Society and the city entered into, a 25-year lease that leased the first floor rotunda and a couple of other rooms in City Hall for them to use and or display items. And in 2003, the earthquake happened, and they and all of us had to move out. And so now it's been 20 years since that lease was signed, and it terminates in 2018. And so since the earthquake, the city staff moved into the pizza parlor. I don't know if any of you remember that. We were there for a little under 2 years, and we had the redevelopment agency had actually purchased this building, and we remodeled that, and once it was finished, we moved into here. We've now been here about 8 years. It'll be 8 years end of this year. And the Historical Society moved all of their museum pieces, most of them, into storage. And the balance of it went into their Colony House. And they've been spending the last several years going through and catalog everything and doing a lot of work on organizing all of their pieces. During the time when the city was talking about, okay, we're going to remodel the City Hall and we're going to move back in, we started looking at the building, what we can do with it. With it empty, you could look at it differently. And one of the things we never had was a reception area, a lobby to come into. And since we've had that here, we really realized the value of having a place where people can come in and you can greet them and direct them to where they need to go to be helped with whatever problem they might have or whatever service they want. And so we looked at the first floor rotunda and realized, because in the past, before the earthquake, we knew we needed a reception area, and we ended up making one of the conference rooms in the back of the building a reception area. It was the only one that would work, which meant when people walked in the front door, there was a sign with an arrow saying, walk this way, and you'd kind of go around the hallway to get to the back to get to the reception area. So it wasn't really terribly convenient or very user-friendly to the public. So the idea came up about using this first floor rotunda for a reception, a central reception area. So we approached the Historical Society about it and talked about it, the variety of options that we had. And then I know that Rochelle and some other city employees went with several of the Historical Society members to on a field trip where they went to other cities and other museums in other cities and how they are presenting their history of their city. And they've over a period of time and meetings, they've come up with a plan where it made sense to make the first floor rotunda a reception area and to put displays in there that would tell a story about Atascadero. The building itself is really a museum piece also, and so read about the importance of the building and the history of Atascadero. Agreed about allowing people to come in and see the building, and they want to participate in that, and we want them to. So it's been a great experience to come to these conclusions together. So what we need to do is basically because this lease that we have with the society on that room, it has a language in there that says to cancel the lease, that the city council has to do that by declaring a variety of things that for some reasons that they might need to dissolve the lease. The one more obvious one is to declare in a public hearing that it's necessary to use the facility for other purposes. So that's why included in your recommendation tonight, it does say that I'm asking you to declare that there's another purpose for that room. But the Historical Society and the city have already agreed that they want to do that together, and that's what one of the agreements that I'm asking you to confirm tonight is that, to sign that. They've already signed both of these agreements that I'm talking about. The MOU in itself is a partnership. It's really just a partnership MOU. It's a memorandum of understanding that says we're going to work together on having them come in and put pieces throughout the city hall and to give tours and who knows what else we might come up with in the future, but that's the purpose of having these agreements. They have been, the lease that they have required them to pay $100 a year for the rent of that room, and they have been paying it even though they haven't been in there, and they have paid 9 years, so they have paid us $900 without being in there, so we are going to be refunding them that money. And I believe that summarizes everything. Again, I can show you the recommendations again, but if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. And also, there are a few members from the Historical Society here. If you have questions of them, there's Jim Wilkins, Tom Lewis, Len Colomoreno, all here to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you. First, let's go to council questions for staff. If not, I would like to invite the president, Jim Wilkins, if you'd like to come forward and lead off. If any other member of the Historical Society who is here would like to share some comments first, and we'll open it up to the general public. But as you are our partner, we will hear from you first. Welcome, Mr. Wilkins.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And it's been a long, what, 4 or 5 years, something like that we've been working at this. Yeah, there's a green light down here.
Okay.
So I think it's on now, here now. Process. And one thing that we have been working on, and I'd like for the general public to know, is that there's 8 of us on this museum committee. And it's Ann Wright, who is our curator, and Tom Lewis. They're from the board of the society. And then there's our archival team, who's been very busy archiving, like Marcia mentioned. And that's Ann Kelly, Colleen Allen, Jim Blaze, Teresa Ransom, and Lynn Johnson, and they make up the other part of the museum, and then myself. And then from the city side, it's Rochelle and Valerie Humphrey. So there's 8 of us that have been meeting probably about a year or so now, and we started sometime around the holidays, which was probably the worst time to start scheduling every other week to meet. So we were kind of limping along, and we got back on our schedule this couple weeks ago. We're starting to meet every couple weeks now. And we did develop the storyline that is the history of Atascadero. It's not that we developed a story. We just took the pieces and put them in some kind of an order. And that's what the hallways are going to do and the different things in the rooms up there. They're going to kind of lead us to that storyline. So that's what we've been working on. So we're excited about it. We know there's a lot of work between now and August. And that's, Marcia was saying, there's something we need to get done. Because to get the next step, this is the legal part of it we need to get underneath our belt. So I'm excited about it. I know everybody at the museum is. And it's just a new chapter It's soon as December hits, this will be the, December will be January 1st, will be the first page of the next 100 years. And that's how I view the rotunda over there. It'll be the first day of the next 100 years. So that's what we're building on. We're closing the first 100 after this centennial and starting the first day of the second 100 years. So with that, I'd like to just say thank you. And I don't know if anybody else from our group wants to say anything, but thanks.
It looks like there is one. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of the City Council, my name is Len Colomarino. I'm an Atascadero resident, and I'm a member of the board of the Historical Society, and I'm one of the directors who's been working hands-on in this matter. And I want to ask you, of course, to approve the staff recommendation on this. We've been looking forward with great anticipation to the reopening of the Rotunda building. And some of our members, I think, are a little nervous about us giving up the lease. And to them, I would just say, sit tight. It's going to be of tourism. And this really should become a tourist attraction. I mean, I can't think of a nicer way to spend a bit of time if you get off the freeway for a little while on a trip than to take a tour through that beautiful building. So we think it dovetails well with the city's tourism objectives. And regarding the arrangement, it will be one that evolves, and we think that by leaving it fluid like this, we'll be able to fine-tune it as we go along with tours, with displays throughout the building, and really getting the most out of this fabulous community asset that we have. So for those reasons, I would ask that you approve it, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to address them, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lewis. This would be the third Mr. Lewis of the evening.
Yes, indeed. As you know, I did not grow up in Atascadero. I call myself the prodigal son thrice returned. Oh, tonight's the same thing. I remember coming to see we called it the administration building. It's what my father called it because that's what his Uncle Ed called it. And I remember coming in the 60s before there was a city of Atascadero and seeing the building and then seeing the museum in the lower rotunda back in the later 60s. And I never really got to see much of the rest of the building back in those days. And so going back some 40-some years, it's kind of like closing a chapter. And it's kind of an easy chapter to close on the one hand for me because it's been empty for 10 years now. There has been no museum in there. And like it's been previously pointed out, that building is in itself a living museum. It is on the National Register. It is a beautiful example of Italian Renaissance architecture. And the way it's been reappointed inside, particularly in the lower rotunda, is just magnificent. And to think that it's...
We'll now open it up to anyone in the public wishing to comment on this item. Seeing no one approach... Welcome, Mr. Broadwater.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members, and members of the Historical Society. My name is David Broadwater. And I don't have any objections to the staff report and the recommendations, so I'm not speaking on that. But I do have a couple of questions. We all know that we just witnessed the passing of Joe Schwartz, the famous photographer, through his art of photography, chronicled race relations in this country and is going to be honored with an exhibit in the Smithsonian Museum. Because of the national significance of his work. And So my question is to both the City Council and to the Historical Society, if, since it's good enough for the Smithsonian, will there be some element of the displays in the museum that will feature Joe Swartz's work and his mission? And then also regarding recent articles regarding deed restrictions that existed about 100 years ago in this town, where only members of the Caucasian race could own property and occupy property. I've lived here since 1972. I've been aware of this for a long time. It's not spoken about much, but in the articles it also did point out that this was common in that historical area, and Atascadero doesn't stand out like a sore thumb, but it is a fact, and it's documented. So my second question is whether the City Council and the Historical Society will require that some of the documentation about those deed restrictions and the policy of whites-only property ownership will be included in the historical displays. My interest is in having our history told honestly. And I don't think it needs to be exaggerated, but one of the other things I think would possibly be a good idea, and maybe we already have this, is a certified curator for this museum to ensure that the history that's displayed meets with academic standards. But I would like to know the answer to those.
Active in hosting an event around the life of Joe Swartz. And at that very time, I have spoken with the family and the some of the folks at Cal Poly working on the Smithsonian, and that was our plan all along, as we plan on having a permanent display in City Hall. At least we have some original photos that are going to be donated by the family, and we'll have a respectful area of it as one of the, I think, one of many artisans in our community, and we have many stories to tell about artisans throughout our history in Atascadero, but that'll be one that we will recognize. And as far as the council taking any action on anything, what it will be displayed or not, that is not something I think the council will be involved with, other than some grander parameters of things that might be illegal, for example. But we are trusting the Historical Society, and I know we were visited recently by the Conference of California Historical Societies. In fact, they were hosted right next door to Mr. Broadwater's house one evening, and they also attended here and were very impressed with the approach we're taking and the Historical Society is taking on representing our history, and I know they have offered some input to work with us as well. So we are looking forward to our partnership with our Historical Society, and I think they've done an outstanding job of taking the lead on history being presented, and I think it will be fair and well represented. I personally am very proud of one aspect of E.G. Lewis, is his involvement in the women's suffrage movement. Not long ago, they had their 100th anniversary, and E.G. Lewis, of course, was a leader in that area, and so I think that's an important piece of history to have represented as well. So with that, we have a motion, an item before us at the council. Any discussion or questions by council, or I would entertain a motion.
I'd like to make the motion that we recommend, we pass a motion and have the recommendations, both items one and two, that staff has recommended regarding the partnership between the city and the Historical Society. I think this is a great way, with a memorandum of understanding, to put forth the principles and the historical items that we want to have for our city.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilman Fonzi, seconded by Councilman Kelly. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi.
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We'll move on to next item, number three, Strategic Planning 2013 Council Goals and Action Plan. Mr. Frace, do you have that?
I think we're on number two, the housing element.
I was so optimistic.
That is an annual requirement we have with the state of California to do that. The purpose of it is the state is interested in monitoring all cities' progress with general plan implementation and housing element implementation. So all cities are required to do this. A little background on the city's general plan. We call it the Atascadero 2025 general plan. It was adopted in 2002 after an extensive public input process. Just to kind of simplify what a general plan is, it is basically the blueprint for the growth of Atascadero. So it contains a number of goals and policies as well as maps and diagrams to guide land use decisions in the city so that we achieve our final goal in terms of what we're trying to build in Atascadero. So that's the purpose of the general plan. We have had quite a bit of activity with the general plan in the last year. We had a major general plan amendment last year, which was the approval of the Del Rio Road Commercial Area Specific Plan, also known as the Walmart Annex Project. So that was a general plan amendment. We changed the designations in that area to accommodate the larger commercial project that's now proposed. There was 22 smaller applications that were also processed. Those included conditional use permits, administrative use permits, as well as tree removal permits. In terms of just construction activity, we processed 712 building permit applications last calendar year. We issued 699 of those applications, and there was 557 of those applications were finaled last year. In terms of general plan implementation priorities that we continue to work on that are identified in the general plan, some of the highlights would be the Eagle Ranch specific plan, which we just approved the contract for the EIR tonight on. The Salinas River De Anza Trail Master Plan, which is a joint effort between the city of Atascadero, Paso Robles, and SLOCOG to create a corridor throughout the North County for pedestrian, bicyclists, and equestrians. Continued expanded use and facilities for transit and bicycles, like our transit station that just was recently completed outside of City Hall. Downtown revitalization, even without the redevelopment agency, continues to be a priority, the Hoff property being a good example of a project that we're working on right now. Then economic development as well as native tree protection are also priorities that we continue to focus on. In terms of the housing element, the purpose of that is to monitor our progress toward what's called the units from being built. So we have to basically clear a pathway so that if there's a market or a desire to build these units, then it is possible to build these units within the city. So our allocation is 462 units for the period of 2007 through 2014. That would include 106 very low-income units, 74 low-income units, 88 moderate units, and then 194 above moderate income units. So what does that mean? Okay, so the median income in Atascadero is $75,000 per year. So a very low income unit would be a family making less than 50% of the median income, or about $37,000-$38,000 a year. Lower income is 80%, or $60,000 a year. Moderate income is 120% of median, which is $75,400. And then above moderate would be above 120%, which is the $9,500 per family per year. This basically shows our building permit issuance for the period. So you can see in 2007, we were still before the recession, or just at the beginning of the recession, we issued 134 residential building permits. Then it dropped off significantly during the recession. This year, we've seen it rebound back up. So we're up to 103 residential permits for the last calendar year. In terms of overall progress, we are making good progress considering the recession toward meeting our housing targets. We've actually completed 66% of the housing allocation. We've built 100% of our above moderate income units, 88% of the moderate income units, 30% of the low-income units, and then 15% of the very low-income units. In In terms of our current trends on housing production, we've seen a 260% increase in permit issuance just from last year. And the primary reason for that is the City Council's dormant permit program. Because the Council had the foresight to keep a lot of these projects on basically a life support during the recession, we've been able to get back under construction fairly quickly now that the economy has picked up. So I just wanted to run through, you know, what are all these projects, because there's a number of them out there. So we have the 100-unit apartment complex that's right there along the entry. We have Sunwood Development that's doing 72 single-family homes. The models are under construction right now. And then Inland Pacific out of the Bakersfield has picked up 12 of the large lot, kind of semi-custom lots called Estancia. We met with them today. So they're getting ready to submit for plans for the construction of that phase. Villas at Montecito is down off of Santa Rosa Road. That's a 28-unit project that we've been working on. West Front Village, which is the project behind Holiday Inn Express. We just met with the builder today. This is also Inland Pacific. They're closing escrow in the next couple days on that. So the 32 units that were approved there, they're looking to build those out in the next 18 months. They're very aggressive. They think they can build and sell all those units. They also are picking up all the unbuilt commercial pads that are surrounding the hotel, and they've got keen interest in figuring out how to get some of the restaurant and retail uses built there that we've been hoping to see for the last 10 years. So we're excited about that. 6709 Atascadero Avenue, Dick Wilhoyt has picked this project up. This is a 12-unit, basically duplex townhouse-type project that we're moving forward with. Tecarita Avenue condos, that's 5 units are still remaining on that project that we're trying to get wrapped up. This is an old Kelly Gearhart project. Amapoa condos, this is a 6-unit project that's being redesigned. It's been to the design review committee once, so we're working on getting this one out of the ground. Oak Grove Phase 2 is up on the north end of town. This was a project that was purchased by People Self-Help Housing, so they have 24 units under construction up there right now. The Oak Haven project's also up by Home Depot. That's a 62-unit townhouse project. That one's getting very close to starting construction, hopefully in the next couple weeks. Then we have the 3F Meadows project out off of Los Altos and Highway 41. So they've got approximately 80 units still that are unbuilt there. There's some issues that we're going to be bringing back to the council to consider on that we've discussed. And then finally, we have the Westpac mixed-use project, which is also down off of Santa Rosa across from Motel 6. This is a 58-unit mixed-use project with townhouses and commercial along El Camino Real. Just been contacted. In fact, the level of activity that we're seeing right now to continue for the next couple years if the economy will support the construction. So in terms of the housing element implementation, there's also a couple other things going on. We've identified a number of zoning changes in the general plan that need to be made to accommodate some of our housing goals. We have a consultant, Lisa Wise, and associates that's currently working on that program. We've been to the Planning Commission for a study session recently. We expect that we're going to go back to Planning Commission with a draft ordinance here in the next month or two, and then that will be coming to the City Council probably this summer. The key features that we're looking at for implementation is the location of a homeless shelter. There's a rule called Senate Bill Number 2 or SB2 that requires cities to locate in their city either a site or an area where homeless shelters are allowed by right. So we've been working with the Planning Commission on the possibility of designating the Echo site as that site. So as that evolves or moves along, that will eventually come before the City Council. We need to update our density bonus ordinance. That's another requirement of the state. A reasonable accommodations ordinance for disabled access to residential units. We need to make some code changes for that. And then we also need to have a code section that deals with what are called single room occupancy units, or SROs, basically like old hotel rooms that could be converted into housing units. That's another state requirement. So We'll be bringing an ordinance that deals with all four of those to the council in the near future. So as I mentioned, the Planning Commission is recommending that we submit this report to the state, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Council questions. I'll start with Councilman Moreno, then Councilman Fonzie.
Thank you. Director Frace, I'm curious about the state density bonus ordinance. I remember a few years ago when the city was required to change its density from a maximum of 16 units to a minimum of 20 for that housing element. So what is the density bonus and what are the changes we're looking at coming down the pike here?
So the state density bonus has been on the state books for decades, and what it requires is that if a developer builds a certain percentage of their project as affordable, and there's a formula, sliding scale, I think typically it's like 5% very low income, then they would be entitled to a 25% density architecture, things of that sort. Our ordinance can specify what those lists of concessions are, and it's good to be precise because the state law is very broad, and we're required to, I believe, provide three incentives per project. So we do need to have an ordinance that puts some boundaries around what it is they could actually ask for in terms of incentives.
It would seem a little odd to me that you would increase density and reduce parking.
That's state law.
Again, crazy, odd. Okay. Thank you.
Warren, I was wondering if we were going to be revisiting our inclusionary housing policy. You had mentioned that some time ago that we may go back and revamp that.
Yeah, I think that's another issue that does need some attention. It isn't necessarily part of this ordinance that needs to be adopted. The inclusionary policy is that it's a policy, but we are very interested in getting some council input on that. So, you know, we would like to have a discussion, I guess, about what the best timing and format to discuss the inclusionary policy would be.
And so those projects that we see on the screen tonight, those will be under our old policy and we'll still have the 20% inclusionary or in lieu fee?
Yeah, those projects, because they're all approved, whatever the affordable requirements already built into them. So we're moving forward with requiring what those original requirements are, although some projects may be coming before you asking for relief. I think the Southside Villas project has already asked for some relief based on, and those were not inclusionary policy units, those were actually state density bonus units that they didn't need the bonus anymore, so that's their rationale for asking for relief on the affordable requirement. So we're seeing that as somewhat of a trend, that there's more and more requests for relief from our policies in the past.
And is the state pushing cities towards creating more mobile home parks because they're considered to be affordable also?
That wasn't a trend in the last round of housing elements. We're not exactly sure what the state issues are going to be in this next round, although what we're hearing preliminarily is they are basically looking just to follow what the policy or what their requirements were last time and not create any new real mandates for cities. So I'm not sure if that's going to be a state issue or not in the next round.
Last question. The single room occupancy, have you identified any sites that might be suitable?
Parameters by which somebody could actually convert old hotel units into living units and what that process would be.
Great, thank you.
Yes, more questions. Councilman Kelly.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Let's go Councilman Kelly first and Councilman Street.
Okay. Go ahead. Warren, a couple years ago, if I recall correctly, didn't the state come down where we had to identify some acre parcels with a density of 26? Did anything ever become of that?
I don't recall exactly that case. I know the state for years has been concerned that our densities were too low when our density was 16 units per acre, but that's what we corrected with the last update, was to bump it up to the 20 minimum.
I just kind of recall that there was something that came down that you had to mandate some acre parcels that were 26 and with really no rules that they had to follow if they went through that, but maybe I'm mistaken.
It probably had something to do with, you know, the minimum density issue. I just don't recall exactly which case that was. Okay.
Yes, Director, just a point of clarification. When it comes to the 66% that have been permitted of the arena allocation, when it comes to the total allocation for 2007-2014, we do not have the land set aside for those. It's not zoned for those 462. Do I understand that correctly? Is that?
No, we are. We have a certified element with the state. The state has recognized that we are consistent with that requirement. So we do have adequate sites for those 462 units. What we just need to change is some zoning rules just to make it basically reduce those barriers like to single room occupancy units.
Well, that's very exciting. So if we're at 66% right now of that we've permitted, actually things are actually being built, do you think we can make 100% of our arena to actually be built?
Well, we're going to hit the total number, 462, but we won't hit them in the categories the state's looking for. So we won't build all the very low-income units that the state's asking for, most likely. But we will probably build more than 460 units total. But because the economy is, the housing prices have come down, a lot of those market-rate units actually will hit the moderate as well as the low-income categories, especially the apartments. So we're going to do pretty well in most of the categories, except very low.
Excellent. Thank you.
Other council questions? Seeing none, we'll open it up to the public if anyone would like to.
Yes. Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. The next item is the number 3, Strategic Planning 2013, Council Goals and Action Plan. I know under a couple of these items we're going to have more discussion. I'm looking for the best time to take a short break. Would you recommend before or after item 3, Mr. City Manager?
This is potentially a short item, okay. So I think either way. This is the information. Do you want me to go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead with item 3.
Bringing back and documenting the information that we discussed at the workshop. And so the City Council identified these goals. This is not in a priority order. This is the collective 6 goals that you brought forward. And we talked about a variety of work items, especially those that were already being done in the organization, and to package those like environmental stewardship so that people could see exactly what accomplishments the council was already invested in and how those priorities worked in the organization. There's a couple of new things, like the Council Corner article, where we're working to connect more with our citizens. But even in that goal, connecting with our citizens, we were really stressing those public policy, public engagement, and public transparency areas that we already have been working on. And so what we are looking for tonight is, one, verification of your goals to actually adopt them at the City Council meeting. And remember, we work this as a 2-year process. So the City Council, we did a variety of different homework pieces to prepare for a workshop at the end of January, and then you spent a day and a half discussing those priorities of the community, the strengths and weaknesses of the organization to embrace those things, the strength and weakness of the council and department head team to tackle these items, and then we created this list of goals, and we discussed a variety of action plans, issues, and programs, projects that could implement these actions in January. So once you adopt this, we're asking today, did we capture right what you said, and did we collect all of the action plans that we had discussed and appropriately set those forward? Once we go beyond tonight's meeting, this information will then be blended into our budgets and distributed to our department early at the beginning of next year. We'll check in and see just, mid-year report. How are we doing? Is this still where we're going? So that this will flow for a 2-year period with the budget as you move through these action plans. So what we would like you to do tonight is comment to us on if we captured what it was you directed, and if there's some additions or refinements. One of the items that came up at the last City Council meeting was the issue of the remote caller bingo. And in strategic planning, we had left that off the list, and that was going to be directed or based more on an application process by the Elks. However, after a brief discussion, we decided to agendize it into this. I added it under one of the goals that we would pursue that. I've been talking with the Elks, as I tried to allude to at the last meeting, as Warren and I investigated that piece of the code that needs to be changed for remote caller bingo. It's really not a zone change. We're not going to create a zone or allow a new use into a zone. It's really in our business section of the code, so it's not a zone change. It is a municipal code text change. So it is a much simpler process. It doesn't require the state mandated public hearings, and it doesn't have to go to the Planning Commission. It really comes back here, much like the scavenging ordinance that we brought here with the police department. It doesn't require all those different changes. So it is a much less expensive proposition than we had quoted to the Elks Lodge. And so I've had discussions with them about charging time and materials, and I thought that wouldn't exceed more than $500 or so. And so that's what I have conveyed to the Elks Lodge that we would try to do. So you may want to talk about that. It is plugged in here, slightly different than what you had at strategic planning. Really with that, we want to collect your comments. If these are truly the goals that that we think we all discussed for those 2 days.
Thank you. I don't know if...
Do you want me to walk through them to make it easier or frame
it? Let's see if first if there's any questions up to this point by council. Questions or comments would be fine.
With regards to the issue with the Elks and the remote caller bingo, I think it's great that we've been able to go from the zone change to the municipal code change.
Here is what we expect the hours that it's going to take to do it. Rochelle always says that Warren and I estimate low, but we think we're right there in that neighborhood someplace. $500 might be too tight.
Okay, so we would have the flexibility to actually say time and materials, and I mean, because if it does exceed 500, again, I don't want us to be subsidizing the process. So that's my concern. I guess we can take that up in communication with each other.
Other questions or comments? Go ahead.
Well, my question: these six items that you have listed here, these are all parallel paths? Are these in succession of most important? How are these?
They are not ranked in most important. It was actually our understanding. We just didn't do that. But it was our understanding that the Lake Park Zoo Veterans Memorial as the event center was your number one goal. Now, if you wanted to rank them, we'll certainly list them in the document in a ranked order.
I don't know. I'm just curious if just how when I'm looking at this, you know, when you see 1 through 6, just in my brain, it always goes, okay, is most important. But you're talking more along parallel paths. These are just the 6 things we want to accomplish.
Yes, that's right. Like I say, we distributed these through our organization and said, how are we going to do this? And then we sort of collected them in that manner, and we did not go back and reprioritize the way you had them at the workshop.
That's fine.
Workshop.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman Kelly, then Councilman Fonzie.
I agree with the 6 items that we have there, and I would like to put some emphasis on the number one, to promote common sense regulations and reform, and I think your example of working with the Elks is a good example of that. And I would also ex parte to say that I am an Elk, so I do support that. And if you feel comfortable with the $500 estimate that you made, I can agree with that. And I think somewhere in these goals, I don't know where you would fit it in, but after the report that Warren just gave, it seems like our building and planning department has quite a significant increase in the workload that they have, and I don't know if some way we can supplement their manpower there so we keep up with the work that's coming into the city so we don't fall behind. The permit fees are a moneymaker for us, so if that could maybe become a tagline on one of these priorities, I would like to.
With landscaping features and front yards that were cited under code enforcement and others that I would like to see gone.
Thank you. Other council comments? I'll weigh in with a couple. One, in looking at any fee structure, of course, I said when this issue had come up, I support all of our community organizations that do so much in our community, but I like to make decisions based on a policy that can be applied across the board in all cases. We do have a principle that we have supported full cost recovery. We're not out to make a profit, but we are a service organization. We, too, are providing services in our community, and if we don't collect enough in one area, we're going to have to cut a service in another area, and we've agreed we would do that as a council if it comes to that. But I appreciate that we've gone from a $4,000 fee that was probably excessive when looking at it from a different perspective, that we did a good job of reassessing that we can do that from a different approach. But I'd be reluctant to just come up with a number. I appreciate it's good to have a reasonable guess to give folks as an estimate, but I'd be more comfortable with we stick with our policy. We are going to support full cost recovery, and that'll be a consistent message. The other item is I noticed I do believe we prioritize these goals, and I would like to have things listed by that prioritization. If we change the prioritization, I think that's fine, but I do think it's helpful for us. We've made a commitment that, yes, we're going to work on all six of these, but we did put some higher value. Often in the case, as we've made some tough choices before, we've often had public service, certainly emergency services, our top priority in the past. But as I said when I came on council, I realized everything I want to do costs money. So it doesn't do a lot of good to say you want to do something if you can't afford to do it. That's why this council is consistent put anything related to economic development is number one, because that's our job, is to go out and make the money to pay for these very needed services. So, again, I would like to keep that in the forefront of our minds. The prioritization we had, I believe, was weighted towards things that are revenue-generating, and I would like to keep that. Any other comments? So, Councilman Fonzie.
Yes, I think it would be helpful if we went through this page by page so the council didn't miss something on each one, and we could maybe just take it by...
Be for that.
I don't believe there's an established fee for that.
Would this be
no.
kind of a guideline to help establish one?
Yeah.
Could we get into some maybe other agreement with the Elks? Because we certainly don't want to overcharge them, and we don't want to pay for it either.
Certainly doing it time, and there's not very many times you modify the code at someone else's request that's outside the zoning ordinance. Right.
Can we maybe just eliminate the 500 and just say time and material?
Certainly.
Yeah, that's
fine. Yeah. I think before we go further, by consensus, you've got agreement on that. We're going to do time and material on that item. Any other comment? Okay, so... Mr. McKinney, then you're going to go forward with this as suggested?
I am. And I think, do you have the original goal, priority ranking of the goals?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll let someone refer that. I don't have that before me. I tried to turn to it really quickly.
It's number one is the developing the Atascadero Lake Park Zoo Memorial, Veterans Memorial, as the community's event center. Number two is the strengthening the city council's communication with the public. Three is working towards common sense regulation and reform. Four is the promotion of environmental stewardship. Five, pursue economic development opportunities. And six, to maintain public safety as a community priority.
So at the end of this, you can tell me if that's still the priority that we're working under. As you recall, in the last couple of strategic plans, Councilmember Moreno, this may be new, this format for you. I know you've been involved in strategic plans. The goals and the values sort of stretch across more than each a particular one, although the goals are primarily directed toward the individual action plan. You'll notice these values are things the City Council said represented them in all decision-making. So in the goals for the common sense, you had to reduce the number of regulations created, encourage a common sense approach to needed regulations, reduce local regulations where possible, and help the community know about and understand emerging regional regulations. Then the following were the action plans, and I was not sure, Councilmember Fonzie, the comment were you talking, was that at that goals session or down below at common sense updates to see action plan? These are not in priority order, they're in book order. Provide the high quality public safety services. And in this area, we wanted to provide excellent customer service. We wanted to further develop our emergency preparedness capabilities, develop and maintain the partnerships that we have and could get, and provide measurable high levels of service. And so we tried to concentrate on the issues that we represented to you and the operations of our current departments. Of course, the departments are both doing some outstanding work. Some of the new things that you might recall is this self-initiated work activities, both in police and fire, where we've really had some great successes. One of the ones I really like bragging about is Erin, where she took it upon herself to train the teachers up there in our responses at the high school, and it's really great activities. Lots of our employees have done some really great things. Any other public safety ones that you felt like we had talked about that we didn't do? Some of these, as you can see, we know that while patience was added to our P words during strategic planning, we know you guys are also anxious to do some. So some of these, like SLESA funds, are already moving along, and it's one of your goals. So we're not waiting to get this adopted, get what you want done. The next one was to promote the Atascadero Lake Park Pavilion Veterans Memorial and Zoo as an event center.
Excuse me, I had one on the public safety.
Okay.
We lost the mayor here.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. On the public safety, we have collaboration and maintaining partnerships, and one of the things that the police department in particular has done is divide the community into sectors. And I thought it would be helpful to add one more bullet under the partnership level down at the bottom of the page.
Okay.
And that would be that public safety would work with neighborhood residents to resolve neighborhood-specific issues as the need arises.
Oh, very good.
So we had these to work with the school district and Lighthouse and other community groups, but not residents in particular.
Thank you.
Hi, Tom.
Okay. Looks like it's you, Bob.
Okay, thanks. On page 194, it says provide high-quality public safety services, but as we go over to page 198.
And you want that to be more specific to public safety, or?
Well, I just brought it up. Or should it be citywide?
Well, we certainly want excellent customer service citywide. This is specifically on a public safety goal, and I think we were trying to be as general and inclusive as possible by saying we're going to provide excellent customer service.
Okay, fine.
We could add that under each category in a sense.
Sure. Did I capture all the public safety ones? So then the next one, promote the Atascadero Lake Park Pavilion Veterans Memorial and Zoo as the event center. And the goals that we talked about were, of course, the achieve reaccreditation of the zoo, increase our marketing efforts for the Lake Park Pavilion and Zoo, and that should say in Veterans Memorial. Improve condition of facilities, should include them all.
Would we want to add on the new FLAC project that Mr. Ward is doing? Brought that up at the...
Well, again, this is at the Lake Park Zoo.
Just the Lake Park?
Yeah, we're okay. Kind of by category.
Okay.
So.
Then it would be increasing parking at the Lake Park complex to create new infrastructure that increases the desirability of the Lake Park complex to host bigger events, benefiting the community, and increase volunteer involvement in programs at the Lake Park complex.
Do we need to take a look at fees as where we are standing now and level of service and being able to upkeep the buildings and what, you know, do we need to update our fee schedule when it comes to these?
Yes, I have a comment on that as well, and I'll just jump in. If you look at the things that we want to do. And again, I have been very much involved in promoting events at this site. I think it has great potential. But what I've been working on is to not ask the city to subsidize events, but rather we get events to start paying their own way. And so I don't want to waive fees. In fact, I want to make sure we are cost effective. I don't know that we are competitive. In some ways, I think we are underpriced. And so I think we should just take a look across the board because, again, we want to raise the value of these. And so I think I would look at combining some of these areas where we say there are some fees. Again, we've got a principle of full cost recovery. Also, at the bottom, we want to increase volunteer involvement. It's helping to subsidize, and then we aren't having to make up that difference and not full cost recovery. So I think you brought up a good point. I'd just like to make sure we are keeping with our principle of full cost recovery.
Perhaps, I'm sorry.
Let's go on with some more council.
I was just going to say that within the finance committee, and we're working out the budget for the coming year, that will be part of our discussion, and we've already started down that road. So good. That's certainly part of it.
Councilwoman Fonzie?
Yes, I was hoping we could add another bullet or a thought. I'm not sure how to word this one, but I think we want to seek compatible land uses near the zoo complex. That we had this ice skating rink, and I know that they're considering coming back and relocating, possibly even at the church site that they were before, if there's a way to assist them or provide them with whatever we can. I would like to have something in there about promoting that.
That's probably a good goal that we could flesh out a little bit more under the goals section would be seek compatible land uses around the Lake Park complex.
That's very good, because we have, I think Councilman Fonzie had brought up before, it is a designated tourist route, and we're almost considering having a tourist zone. We might want to look at that more, because I think certainly encouraging or paving the way, so to speak, for like facilities that could well be private sector that would augment that event center would be a very good idea.
On the fees item, potentially under the last action item, improved facilities and infrastructure at the Lake Park complex, we could just add a final bullet under modernize would be review adequacy of current fee structure.
Are we going to have like a workshop on these fees? Because, you know, I want to make sure that we're competitive and that we don't overprice, you know.
Yes.
You know, okay.
We will bring that information back.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I don't have any problems. I think every once in a while it's okay to give back to the community. You know, like on the 4th of July, opening up the zoo. I know some people, you know, maybe don't agree with that. But I think it's very rewarding to the community where we can open it up one day and you have 2,000 families that are able to go to the zoo that probably can't afford it. And after that happened last year, there was an increase in attendance at the zoo and there was an increase in income. So, you know, I don't want to completely shut the door on that. I don't want to give it away every weekend either. But I think there can be
a special offer. The marketing can tweak it and will come out ahead anyway.
Right.
So it isn't necessarily a fee schedule that's set in stone, but it is actually very flexible.
Thank you. The next one is to promote environmental stewardship. Side note, this one will be kicked off by the mayor in the next council corner. On the goals were to promote and publicize the city's environmental stewardship goals and accomplishments, find a balance point between environmental and economic goals, involve the public and volunteers in achieving the city's environmental goals. In this case, we were trying to point out those items that we're already doing that have been very environmentally sensitive and work with the new regulations as they can't come in, the stormwater and air quality and other regulations, climate action plan, so that both our economic values and our environmental values become balanced. So we are we do have these action plans to try to present a variety of pieces of information showing not only what we're doing but what we could do and following up on those potentials that make sense, like we talked about solar at the wastewater treatment plant.
Let me add, I think I guess I'd like to get in a little more detail at some point. I don't know that we need to do that now, but I do think, like we've said elsewhere, kind of looking at some of those common sense regulations, one of our things that we wanted to do was look at areas where some of these regulations actually are harmful to the environment, even though they're supposedly environmental requirements. And I think where we can help come up with some suggestions that we did say we wanted to pursue that legislatively and almost like a legislative platform. I think there are some areas there is room for improvement. Likewise, there are some things that are simply good ideas. We want to make it easier for our community to implement. I think we've done that with gray water systems, for example. We have a very simple over-the-counter gray water permit process, same with solar. I think any of those areas that really make good economic sense, we just want to make sure, much like we did looking at the Elks project, this is a pretty simple review process. Let's have it minimal cost for folks. And then kind of a third category is, I think, working with the community. There's a lot of partners out there, and I think it kind of touches on this, but I want to make sure we have a very...
thing where, even if they're mandated, that the people accept them, that it's okay.
You brought up a very good point. I meant to emphasize that more. A lot of what we do is we are kind of a liaison and help our community meet some of these state requirements. So I think of like with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, I don't think it's good for our community for the average person to have to deal directly with the water board on septic systems, for example. We worked with a plan that we would monitor our community, work with our community for a good system, and kind of be a buffer between some of these state agencies. And that's something I think we want to do that more, because I think we can do a better job for our community and kind of be that whatever is between a rock and a hard place and buffer some of these requirements that I think we can really help our community meet.
Do we think we captured that in these comments?
I'm not sure about that.
Well, you have down here, involve the public and volunteers in achieving the city's environmental goals. It's almost like we help raise the awareness. If we raise the awareness of people's awareness of the environmental things that they can be involved in that can actually benefit them and the environment. So it's kind of like that, I don't want to call it education, it's more just a matter of, educating. but it's there's things that I've become aware of that I've just learned from the cans I have at my home where I recycle, or the worm beds at Tom's house, or you know, these things that I've just come across in my own life that I go, oh, wow, that, you know, I can make a difference for the environment, and it also helps me financially, it helps the environment, it's win-win. So, I don't know, just that kind of a partnership, like Tom says, a lot of people, we do interact with a lot of people, and if there's ways that we can get that kind of information out, then...
And I think that's what we tried to do here, is really balance this, because you're, at the same time, you're trying to balance... The first one, the having common sense regulations with environmental stewardship. And so we really came at this, as we discussed its strategic planning, in a way of public information and in a way of creating these goals in a user, or these new regulations in a user-friendly sort of way, and making it, like you just said, where things that are financially make sense, help them along, make them more simple, like Councilmember Kelly said.
Yes. Thank you.
That's what we tried to capture. So if you look at the next one, pursue economic development. We want to grow the local business economy, building, maintaining, keeping a track of capacity to deal with these projects in the sort of forward-thinking way the council is expecting.
Meet your thought?
Yeah, I think if we want to pursue economic development, we've got to reduce the hurdles as much as we can. And, you know, time is money to developers, so, you know, if we can expedite the process or provide them with the service that they're paying for, I think that that's our responsibility.
Well, I think you were wanting to make sure we were kind of monitoring the staff level, because we could make it more timely by reducing requirements, or we can make it more timely by helping with the requirements right. If you can't reduce them. So I think you wanted to make sure we had adequate staffing.
I just want to make sure the process works efficiently.
Results. Very good.
How about both? How about making sure staffing and capturing any kind of, where we can find some relief when it comes to, whether it's regulation or whatever it may be that does make it cumbersome?
Well,
kind of both. There's a balance.
We want to keep the scale balanced.
I think we all agree on
that. I think you'll see more of that in the next staff report where we're trying to make that happen. So then the last one, pursue more connection between the city council and community. We're trying to value community engagement, connect in new and different ways the council to the community, provide a variety of opportunities for community members to participate in local government, and provide opportunity for community members to get information about local and regional programs and regulations. So we between all of us, came up with a variety of potential outreach opportunities that we're already employing several of. With that, if you wanted to go back and do you want to go back to the original priority? Is everybody good with that?
I think we're okay on the priority we had.
The one that Heather read?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Okay. Do we want to open up to the public on that item? So if any member of the public would like to comment on these items, this particular agenda item, seeing none approach, we'll move on. And
do we vote on that?
I'm thinking, what action do we need to finish up that? It's more of a... Yeah, we're done. We don't have to vote on that. So let's take a break.
Well, it just says that we're recommending that they adopt the goals. Do you?
Well, if you would adopt the goals and action plans as...
We have some discussion on some areas that have come up over time that we may be able to address under this item. Could you give a brief overview before we take a break of what we're going to be doing on this item? They all sound the... We really need a break.
This next action will be the action plan, specifically about improved plan check and development processing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we definitely need a break. I'm either one ahead or one behind. It ought to average out. Okay, we'll take a break. Okay, we're going to go back to work, and I think it's unanimous. We're sending the police chief home. I think on your way out, if you want to go see the city attorney, if you needed to consult with him, you can catch him in his office because he's not here yet. I think it's time.
Okay, time to move over a little bit.
Thank you. Are we all in agreement? We're on item four now. Strategic Planning 2013 Action Plan Update. Improved plan
R4?
Check.
Is that R4 or year 4?
Yeah, that's 4. That's 4.
I'm joining with my peers, and we're going to take up this item now. Go ahead, staff.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This next item is an update on our plan check process. This was an issue that was brought up during the strategic planning session, that there were some concerns about our plan check process and the need to do some streamlining and update and outreach on that. So this is basically an update in terms of just where we're at in this process. They're also a key to economic development, whether it's housing development or new commercial buildings. Those permit fees, the taxes, all those sorts of things are major parts of our budget and what keeps the local economy going. So definitely there's a need, and it's important to make that process as efficient and easy as possible, because the more development we encourage around here, clearly it benefits everyone within the community. So the issue that we've been looking into is our plan check process, which is the process that happens before we issue a permit for construction. So I wanted to kind of go through just some kind of basics on just what plan check is, just so that we kind of know what the different terms are that, you know, we're talking about here. So the plan check process, most simply, is our process to ensure consistency with the California Building Code, which is the state requirement that we follow, as well as the Atascadero Municipal Code. So we're looking for consistency with both those codes when we're going through a plan check process, and we have a variety of those. And this is what we do, or this is required prior to issuing the permit for construction, whatever that project might be. So plan checking is divided up among a number of the different departments within the city. So building services does look at the building code issues, and sometimes that's subbed out to California Code Check to assist with that process. Planning services, they look at a lot of your zoning issues, your tree protection issues, that sort of thing. Public Works looks at a lot of your public improvement requirements like streets, drainage, sewer, that sort of thing, which are typically requirements in your municipal code. And then the fire department, they look at local requirements that we have for special conditions like driveway access, as well as UBC requirements or building code requirements for life safety issues. And some of those checks are also done by California Code Check on some of the bigger commercial projects. So typically, on an average year, we process about 700 building permit applications on an annual basis. Sometimes it's higher and lower, but the average has been 700. Of those, about 75% of those are fairly minor permits that are plan checked in-house. The remaining 25%, in terms of the building permit process, are subcontracted out or plan checked by California Code Check, which is our plan check contractor. So those minor permits, those would be your swimming pools, your photovoltaic systems, residential additions and detached buildings with tricky occupancy, things like assembly buildings, and then also more complicated residential additions and remodels that are designed under the building code rather than the residential code, which is a little bit more complex. So those are the major ones. Those are the ones that are sent out to our contract plan checker. So this is a chart here that just shows permit application activities since the city was incorporated back here in 1980. You can kind of see it went up in the 90s and then dropped off. There was a recession. Then in the early 2000, we had that giant housing bubble that got us up to almost 1,300 permits a year. And then we had the drastic fall off over the last couple years in the recession. And now we're picking back up to that point where we're at 700 permits again. So if you average over time, 700 permits has been where we're at. We're expecting over the next couple years we're going to be back above that again. As we mentioned, dormant permits have been a challenge for us. They're a benefit in that they've created an opportunity to build a lot of units and get projects back up and running. At the same time, they've been a significant challenge. As we talked about a little earlier, there's basically 12 dormant projects that have all come back to life in the last 18 months that we're trying to work with all those applicants on and getting those projects going. Because these were bankrupt projects, there's a lot of hidden issues that we're not necessarily aware of. There's things that might have gotten buried underground or not done quite right or plans that are missing that we don't know about when we start getting one of these projects going with the applicant. Sometimes they come to light late in the process and sometimes they're expensive. So that's something we didn't really expect when we were doing this dormant program. This is something we've never done before, and this is something we're discovering, is that there's just fish hooks in these projects, and they come to light later in the process. We just haven't been able to know about them up front. These are also planned development projects, so they typically have, you know, a very thick list of conditions from the City Council and Planning Commission, from everything from architecture to special facilities to affordable housing. So there's a lot of rules that are tied up. And the original applicant obviously understood all these. That guy is long gone. So whoever picked this up is probably somebody that knows very little about Atascadero. They don't know about any of our policies or programs. So there's a learning curve. There's some bumps in there that we just inevitably go through as they get used to our process and understand what these projects were approved as. We also have new engineers on the project, and all the staff members actually that are, helped design these projects originally are very fast on their turnarounds. It also reduces our staff costs, so we don't have to employ full-time plan checkers, which the other benefit is the ability to adjust to spikes in the permit activity. So over time, permits go up and down, and from month to month, we can be very busy and then not busy at all. With a contract plan checker, they'll absorb those ups and downs. They have to respond to our timelines. In-house, if we just had, say, one plan checker, sometimes they might not be busy at all. Other months, they might not be able to keep up, and that would be where the time frames would become erratic rather than more consistent, which has been our goal over time, is to have consistent permit time turnarounds. They also have a higher level of expertise. They have special engineers like fire protection engineers that can help us out that we don't have on staff. There are also drawbacks, of course, to having the contract process contracted out. There's more communication barriers. Those plan checkers aren't in the office. Sometimes it's harder to figure out who you need to talk to, so that's an issue. Also, sometimes minor projects will get sent over and have a more complex or technical review than really was necessary, and we'll end up with corrections and issues that may not really be necessary on a smaller project that can be a frustration as well. So to try to improve our process and get a little bit better idea about how to make this work as well as possible for the development community, we held a contractor roundtable in February. We sent out 400 invitations to architects, engineers, contractors, developers, anybody that has done any work with a city and permit activity of any sort. We invited them to come to the roundtable just to discuss their issues. We had 40 show up in attendance, so we had a good turnout. And what we did is we went around the room and we asked everybody in the room to give us their input, positive, negative, what they liked, what they didn't like, their ideas. So we really, you know, gave everybody the opportunity to make their comments. And then we had Russ wrote down all the comments, so we captured everything up on the wall. So everybody had the opportunity to tell everybody else what their concerns were, their ideas. So as we captured all this, a number of themes kind of came to light when you sifted through all of it. One of them was the need to improve communication with plan checkers, not only code check, but also internally with all the departments. People would get corrections. They're not sure what they meant or who wrote them and that sort of thing. So that the fees that really were a concern, those were such a high percentage of the overall construction costs. There's also concern that our road improvement requirements, especially on smaller projects where there's a requirement to go out and repair existing roads, was discouraging smaller projects. So to respond to some of these concerns, we did issue a letter that we sent out to all 400 invitees, even if they didn't show up to the meeting. We put together a package of information to try to address some of these concerns. One was to improve the communication, so we sent out this chart that lists all of the different staff members and contractors that do plan check. It identified what different sections or codes that they typically deal with. It gave their direct phone numbers as well as their email addresses. So if you had a tree question, you could find out that, oh, you should really talk to Callie about that, and here's Callie's email address or something like that. So we got that out to everybody. That's also posted on the website, so even if you lose yours, you can look it up again. We've also set up a process to schedule meetings with Brian Spain from California Code Check. He does work across the street, so he is available. If you call Rochelle Paris, our permit tech, she'll schedule you a meeting. So if you need to meet directly with Brian, we think typically we can arrange that within the next day. In terms of the residential plan check correction list issue, the building official and Brian put together a plan checklist of all the different issues that need to be looked at on single-family residential, not only building issues but planning issues, public works issues, fire issues. We put together a checklist so anybody drawing plans would know that, say, the new section on the green code that's part of the building code now would be something that would be plan checked and list which issues would be on there. So you should be able to make sure that those are on your plans before you submit them, which should help with the whole process. So that's now available as well. We've redone the website. We created a page just on the contractor update information. We've got these documents. We also have some standard details, like if you need a detail for a retaining wall, that's on there. So we're trying to put some more information in a concise spot on the website, and there's some other features that we'll add to that as we have more information and more standards and details available. So that's what policy decisions. So the first would be that road improvement requirement. So as I mentioned, there is a code requirement in the zoning ordinance that says when you improve your property, once you improve it more than, is it 25%?
Yeah.
25% of the assessed value. So if you have an old house with a low assessed value and you do a modest addition, you could easily trip over that 25% threshold. Then you have to do frontage improvements, which depending on your street could be anything from an overlay to possibly some widening, that sort of stuff, and could be fairly expensive, especially on a small project. So we know that's a concern. And that's something we need direction from the council in terms of how that policy should be applied. Is 25% the right threshold? Should it not be applied to additions? Should it only be applied to new houses? Should it not be applied at all to residential? That's the policy decision. So that's what an example of something we're intending to bring back to you on the 28th. Second units, we hear a lot of concerns about the fees on those. There's a lot of second units out there. There's a lot of desire to build more, but the big hang up always is the fees. So the city requires capital facility fees on them, which are about $15,000 per unit. The water company requires a water meter, which is about $19,000. School fees are another $3,000. So you're looking at $40,000 in fees. So that's a big disincentive to do a legal second unit, and it does actually encourage probably a lot of bootleg units to occur throughout the community. So we do think there's an option. We can't fix some of the water company fees necessarily, but we could look at options to reduce at least our fees on second units, which would be a step in the right direction. So we're going to bring that back for some policy discussion. Our planning fees are another issue that it seems like that affects the business community the most, especially small commercial businesses. There's a lot of businesses that are proposed in the commercial zones that may require conditional use permits under our zoning ordinance, and we've already reduced the fees where we have the minor permits for the use permits in existing buildings, but even that $1,000 fee seems to be too much for some of these small startup businesses that are trying to get started. So one of the things we might want to consider is looking at reducing all of our zoning fees, which would be the AUPs for signs, the use permits for new businesses, that sort of thing, and then make that process as cheap and easy as possible. We think we can actually recoup some of that so we have to bring it in. It has to be routed through city engineering and planning to look at it. There's a possibility we could just change the tree protection requirements on septic repairs so that that's not required. That's a council policy decision. We think that's within your latitude to give us some direction on that and speed that process up. And then submittal requirements. This is something we deal with quite a bit where we get partial submittals where they'll bring in half the plans but not all the plans, and there's always a struggle at the front counter to be friendly and bring in whatever they have, even though if it's not all there, it usually gets kind of lost or confused in the system and ends up taking longer in the long run. So we are trying to figure out where the balance point is between bringing everything in and making people feel happy that they turned it in versus sending people back to go get, you know, the rest of it so that they actually have something that will go through the process as efficiently as possible. And, you know, it's a balance. Sometimes we can make, you know, special exceptions, but as we make special exceptions for everybody, pretty soon the whole system just starts to bog down, and that's something we're looking for some direction on and which way you want to see that go. In terms of the dormant permit program, we've met quite a bit in the last day or two just trying to figure out how to improve that process as much as possible. I just mentioned, you know, all the issues that we are running into on that. So what we've decided that we're going to do, or the goal is to create as predictable a process as possible so there aren't these last-minute surprises and changes that come up on these projects. So the goal is on these projects early on is to create what's a project roadmap where we'll basically issue a letter to the applicant and list all the issues that we know about and then provide some direction in terms of how we're going to navigate the project based on this roadmap. That roadmap will be a living document we envision, so we also want to then schedule monthly check-in meetings with the applicants so that as the roadmap changes or new issues evolve or something, that everybody's on board. Because typically we have an applicant, we have an engineer, we have an architect, and then we have all the different departments that are all got a little piece of these. And if not everybody's on the same page at all the same time, it's very easy for one of these things to kind of get sidetracked. So today we did meet with Inland Pacific, which is the new buyer on the West Front project, and this is exactly the process we laid out with them. So the planners right now are working on the roadmap. They're very excited about the monthly check-in meeting. We actually have been advertising for the last month or so for proposals for plan check services. So that closes the end of this week, and then we'll be doing a review of the different proposals that we've received. This will come back to the council probably in June, so we'll bring back a list of qualified consultants, and the council will have the ability to give us direction on how you want to handle the plan check process as we move forward. So that will conclude my report. This is, as I said, a receive and file. We are looking for comments and direction on moving forward.
Thank you. And I'm going to go first and just make a few comments. One, I think whatever the police chief left with, he left some of it with me, and I appreciate your help. I'm fading anyway, so if I'm thank you that you keep me on track. I do know we've, as a council, accepted my original mayoral goals of being positive, proactive, and productive, and we keep adding another one now and then. I like patient from Brian, but I think I know Russ and Warren have added predictable. I think that's what we're really looking at in this. I think in our council's attempt, a really strong desire to be business friendly, I think we have also created some unintended consequences, and I think staff in trying to do that have, in a sense, run into some challenges. I think they've done a good job of when something needs to be brought to our attention, like we had a problem where we clearly goofed on a map issue, and I appreciate that staff brought it to us. We made a correction. We took responsibility for that. I think there's also a number of problems that have accumulated that I think staff have been able to group into some categories or problem areas that really we can address as policy issues. I think that's what we're seeing some of. I know Councilman Kelly has come across some more areas. We've all had different areas that might be code issues or things that we can take a look at. I think this is our opportunity. So I know staff welcomes input at this time because we can bring these things, kind of group them back into policy categories, and then we have a date scheduled where we can systematically, predictably try to make it a better system. And I think it's good for the council to get involved in this so that we...
That roundtable meeting, and it was really, really good, and I want to thank staff for putting that together. And there were several things that were brought up in that meeting. I think one of the things which Warren addressed is when somebody has a simple little residential house they want to build, it seems like they were getting a plan check for a much more complex issue, and they were looking for some type of division between a simple project, I guess, and a complex project. And one of the things that was brought up, I think, was that, and I think Warren might be in the process of doing it, is having a uniform cover sheet that would be available to go on all permit applications, so everybody was on the right path. I think that's a good direction to go into. There was also some discussion from some of the architects and engineers that they felt that they were the experts in their field and that they were qualified, licensed, and what have you, to perform the work that they were hired for. they felt somewhat offended that their qualifications, I guess, were being questioned during the plan check process. So I don't know if there's some way that we can recognize their expertise and accept that. I know, like when Russ was in private work, he did a lot of work for me, and I had all the confidence in him, and I think the city has confidence in him, and I believe there's other engineers out there. If we could have some type of process, maybe where these engineers or architects go through a process where they're certified and accepted for the city, it might be able to streamline the process. The other thing I think Warren kind of hit it was, I always kind of felt kind of bad for failed septic systems. I consider that an emergency. And I think if my system failed on a Thursday afternoon or Friday, I would probably have mine fixed by Monday and suffer the consequences. So I don't know if there's something that we can put in place where if an engineer comes online that he can certify the correction that might be needed under an emergency situation. I think that would be good. Fees, I believe, is an issue. Just the other day, I, as you know, I represent the city on affordable housing committees and what have you, and I did go check the fee structure for the affordable self-help project up on the north end of town. A little 1,373 square foot house, including water meters and school fees and what have you, is almost $49,000. Probably, I think it's an area that we can talk about. But I was felt very glad about the roundtable. Like I say, the 40 people that were there, they all had very good input. Some of the things that I've been concerned about for years, and I'm very satisfied that our staff is trying to correct a good portion of them.
Button is not cooperating. Any other council? Go ahead, Councilman Sturdivant.
Yes, Director. Kind of the same vein of that road improvement requirement, the very first bullet up there. There's been circumstances where multiple properties on a single, multiple buildings on a single property under a conditional use permit, minor work has been going on in one building, but yet the entire property is being held to a standard, to bring brought up to a certain standard. Just like, kind of like what you're talking about, the road improvement. So is that something different? Would that be something different, a different venue than what we're talking about here? Or
I think it falls under the same issue. And that is another issue is sometimes houses have a really small frontage, so it doesn't really make sense to make the improvement. And sometimes they have giant frontages where they've got like a quarter mile of frontage, but they're doing mm-hmm. something, you know, fairly small, and then they get hit with a quarter mile of street. So, you know, that's the kind of thing we're just trying to figure out where the balance point is, where the council comfort level is with road improvement. So we're looking for whatever issues or concerns you have, and that's what we're hoping you can bring us is those examples that you think mm-hmm. aren't working so we can address them.
Well, actually, that one actually did cost a friend of mine quite a bit of money because he had wanted to do a very small remodel on his property, which has multiple buildings, and he was going to be held to an extreme amount of upgrading that he couldn't afford. So I'd like to see where we could talk about if there's a small amount of work being done on a property that has multiple units, being more just focusing in on the unit that's being worked on kind of thing, being more focused, that's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilwoman Fonzie.
Thank you. You hit on many good points tonight. I appreciate this report. It's been needed. I think part of the problem is that you have very strong personalities for developers that come in. They're very driven in where they want to go, and it makes it tougher for staff to deal with them. I deal with those kind of people frequently in my line of work, and I kind of know what you're up against. I think maybe the interaction might be a form of training that may be needed for staff to deal with certain circumstances, and we need the customer service to understand, to get them on the track and they know what's expected of them from start to finish. This architect and engineer taking offense, I know that that's going to come up, and I don't know how you can deal with that. Maybe you can sift it through, but generally an engineer will probably know quite a bit about what's needed for the project. Maybe we just need to let them take responsibility because they do anyway. I don't know. That one you're going to have to kick around, but I know that ultimately the engineer is generally responsible for many of the things that goes wrong if something isn't engineered correctly. They put their stamp on it. They own it.
In terms of road connections and fees, I know that there's been some issues with fire connections connecting behind buildings and being long and involved and costing more too. So maybe we need to put that on the plate. Not only is it the street improvements, but sometimes they're fire road connections or road connections. I know there's one on Casanova that's huge that goes behind a house, and the house has not been final for years. It's not a good thing to have continuing. I think perhaps we need to have the council involved more frequently in this process. This came through the Elks. They came to us and said, we have a problem with your fees, and we chewed on it, we spat it back out, and came to a conclusion. I think sometimes that may be the final way to solve some of these issues. If it's something that staff feels uncomfortable with, they don't want to take the responsibility for it, they want to kick it upstairs, that's why we're here. So perhaps that might be one of the things that we do as a last resort. That's it.
Thank you. Councilwoman Moreno.
Well, issues have been pretty well covered. One of the last point up there you have about the submittal requirements, I know one of the issues is that some people come in with, I think, what you typically call a plan on the back of a napkin, but just, you know, something kind of small, and in the attempt to be business friendly, you've been looking at that, and then you come back with this whole list of requirements, and people either get turned off by that, or they go to meet those requirements, and then they do a formal plan later, and then they come back with more changes, and they think, hey, you know, what's going on here? So I know that that's an issue, and I think maybe part of it is that that cover letter that is being talked about. So when somebody submits, you know, just sort of a conceptual plan, that they understand that what they're going to get back may be a list of items that are much more significant than they would ever have to consider, because we really don't have all the information we need. And I think of it as kind of sidling up with the applicant, because they are our customer. And so
that you would submit your plans for a plan check, a correction list would come back, the corrections were made, you resubmitted it, and at times it appeared that another plan check was made and came back with more corrections to be made. Now, I realize that sometimes when the corrections are made, they may not be the correct corrections that need to be made, but at other times it seems like, oh, you know, there's additional things that probably should have been caught the first time or something. So I don't know how we can control that or try to reduce that. I call it multiple plan checks.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that topic comes up periodically, and I think there's issues on both sides, but I think we do want to try to sort that out. I'm going to, in some ways, just repeat some of the things already said, but I thought some very good points were made. Councilman Fonzi brought up the point of, I think there's a range of customers, and I think sometimes staff at the front desk also don't realize that some folks really don't understand the process, and for us to try to go the extra mile and work with them, I think that is good for our taxpayers to get that level of service. For others that really should know more, that's a professional dealing with a project, I think in our zeal as a council to be business friendly, you've taken in some stuff that isn't right ready to go, and I think at some level, you know, we need to make sure you're getting what you need to do the job, so we aren't wasting everyone's time. So it's a balance. I think we're going to just ask that you look at that and you tell us how we can support. I think some of the road improvement issues you brought up are a very good point, and I think what's disappointing, on one hand, we certainly want to support road improvements. We don't have a lot of ability to do that, and I think originally this policy was designed to do that. The problem is there's this economy of scale. As you said, it's a lot of the cost on this road work is getting a bunch of flag folks to block off the road and do some things to basically work on a little dinky piece of road. It would be a heck of a lot more cost effective if all your neighbors were doing it at the same time. So I think what's frustrating to folks is you might have a few hundred dollar project that's going to cost you a few thousand because of the economy of scale is too small. And I think just from a practical standpoint, we're wise to take a look at that. There's just got to be another way we can deal with that road issue. I've often concluded in our, quite frankly, as a policy, certain situations, and I think you're kind of looking at it from a good perspective. Let's kind of look at the different situations and Maybe there is more. We're not really doing a cost-benefit analysis on some of these projects that maybe we'd look at a little differently. There's a greater benefit to the community in some cases that we're not accounting for that benefit in looking at these costs. I'm a little torn on the issue of, I'm a strong believer in trusting professionals. You hire an engineer to do something, it should be on them to do it right, and you kind of hate to have a second engineer look it over. But there's a number of variables, because some cases there's a lot of agencies involved. I know in my case with a bed and breakfast, you talk about septic issues, we get inspected by the health department. If there's an issue, it's a do not pass, go, do not collect $200, you are immediately shut down. That's something you got to take care of. So there's lots of other agencies looking that, you know, maybe in some categories you can look at differently. On the other hand, I also know that we may need to communicate with our business community. I think sometimes it's a good thing that we are taking a second look at things for two important reasons. One, I think it's that economy of scale. I think when other agencies like the Regional Water Quality Control Board look at us as a city and they're not sure if they trust a particular range of different engineers doing things differently, but they will approve a process that basically another agency like the city is reviewing. So by us, again, intervening, by us having a process where we're taking a second look at it, it's darn better than having a whole bunch of other agencies taking a look at every project. So I think it's truly a service that we don't get credit for sometimes. I think there's some cases we need to have that extra level of review, but we need to communicate why we're doing it. In some cases, it's really part of our arrangement with the Regional Water Quality Control Board that we're going to do their job for them, so we aren't going to have an inspection every year of every septic system in the town, things like that. Also, I think we have a community diversity that, you know, there's some folks that think we ought to be moving a lot quicker on projects. There's a whole lot of folks think we shouldn't be doing any more projects at all. And so I think in our community, we've all experienced that political pendulum swing. I think as a community compromise, we may set opinions. So again, with my fellow council members, appreciate staff taking this on, because you're going to come back. We're going to have a public process where we really look at these pros and cons on these policies, and I think hopefully give staff some better direction and improve it. Councilman Kelly,
yeah,
comment.
Just one other thing. I've processed hundreds of permits, and it probably took a couple years for me to learn how to put a complete package together. And once I learned that, the process became a lot easier. And I think a lot of the problems are caused by owner builders or people not experienced, and they have to learn the process. I know in the real estate business, we have seminars for first-time home buyers. So I don't know if maybe once a month we may want to have a seminar for new builders in town or owner builders and show them what the process is, what a complete package is, and explain to them that your permit's not going to get processed unless you have a complete package. So, you know, it might be part of an educational process that might cost a little bit of money, but save us a fortune in the streamlining of the process. So that was just a suggestion.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what's good, is this is our chance to kind of take a look at all these areas, but I'm going to be very careful to make sure we really hear staff what that means in implementing, because I think there's been some times we haven't really thought it through and are living with some unintended consequences. So I feel like it's our responsibility, as Councilwoman Fonzie has said, we need to be more involved in some of this. So thank you. Any other comments by council? I don't know if I've opened up to the public. This is a receive and file on this item, so we aren't going to take action tonight. We are bringing it back May 28th. But you are welcome to comment on anything you've heard tonight. Thank you.
Hello again. I'd like to make a comment based on something Mr. Kelly said that I found shocking and alarming. And it's mostly that our government is prescribing that municipalities create low-income and modest-income housing, et cetera, et cetera. And many people are up in arms about the cost of housing, And yet, the local municipality and many across California have a $50,000 fee approximately for building a small home. I think the challenge for municipalities is to create a process where a person that is an owner-builder can have a very streamlined process and very low fees. I think the disconnect, Prop 13, as you probably all well know, it's an incredibly unfair system. And anyway, I'd just like to have you take on the challenge of making it so a young couple can start out and build their own house. Building a house is not rocket science. It's really a fairly easy thing to do. But the codes have gotten incredibly complex, and the municipalities and the fees are... I don't know why Mr. Frace commented that it costs about $19,000 for to get a water connection. I don't know why that's the case, and I don't know why that can't be changed.
We've asked that question a time or two, but I can't wait to give you an answer to that. But please carry on if you have more comment. If you still have a few seconds on the clock.
Well, I think that would be a good challenge to take up for any municipality that wants to make progress in the public, public planning and public service, make it affordable. I know I came across something in past months looking at San Luis Obispo County Building Department. They used to have a dozen or so stock plans where an owner-builder could take this stock plan that they got, I think, for free from the county, and it was automatically accepted, plan checked, and done. They could build that house. Great idea. Maybe a community could have 100 stock plans, plans for buildings that have already been built and designed and engineered, and architects have worked on them, are relatively inexpensive to purchase. And if the city and the building department can approve them and make them stock plans, that'd be fantastic. What first step? Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Any other members of the press comment? No other comment. We'll close public comment, bring it back to council. I do have to just address some of your comments for the record that, of course, all of our fees, we focus on being just full cost recovery. And, of course, water fees in our community are not from the city. There's a separate municipal water company, and those costs basically are the costs for delivering water, and it's a lot of infrastructure issues and cost recovery for them. So it's not like there's a particular profit associated. And there is a marginal cost. I think I know how it is when my parents built a house for very low cost. And then with current fees, property taxes, which kind of go towards paying police services, fire service codes are really from the state of California. And if you know anything about the state of California, you know we got a lot of challenges on regulations. But thank you for your comment. Any other council direction for staff? We have enough to take a run at this May 28th.
Yeah, I think we have good direction there, so we'll start working on that report right now.
Very good. Well, you can wait till tomorrow. That's not a problem. Other council, I think that is it for that item. It's a receive and file. We'll move on now to the next agenda item, which is council announcements and reports. We'll then get into committee reports. So any council member wishing to report on any activity? Councilman Fonzie.
This isn't an activity exactly, but it's a request for the city engineer to drive down a particular street that I go on all the streets in town probably more than most people do. There's one street that scares the dickens out of me. I don't know how a police car could go down it or a fire engine even possibly, because I drive a Toyota and I cannot turn around and come back on that street. It is Linda Vista. It's off Navarette. It has no way to turn your car around when you get to the end. And I think it just is a very publicly unsafe street. And I know it's a private street, which poses some issues as well. But I just feel for the people on that street. If they were to have a heart attack or a fire, it's not a good place to be.
Thank you. Other council reports. We'll move on then to committee reports. And I will go first, as I'm first on the list. I'll defer the City Schools Committee report to Brian Sturdivant, who's on that committee with me. Our last County Mayor's roundtable was over in Morro Bay, and we were joined by Senator Monning and Assemblyman Kachwa-Shajian, and again, mainly talking about tourism issues, because we're in Morro Bay, and folks are very excited about working together in that area. The Integrated Waste Management Authority will be meeting their executive committee meeting tomorrow, and I'm now vice chair on that, and I think the next big issue with integrated waste management, nope, we won't be talking about plastic bags anymore. We'll be talking about food waste recycling, and that is something that is being looked at statewide as such a pretty good percentage of that food waste going to landfills. If that was handled differently, could greatly increase the capacity and years of use. Some road work up around Highway 1 where bicyclists have had a lot of problems, and it's really chewed into the tourist trade, and canceling of car shows with antique cars and canceling of bike events that, again, it was felt like with a little bit of community involvement at the front end, Caltrans might have made a different decision and very slow to fix a problem when they realize there is a problem. Where I think it's a good example, again, where we were proactive, we hear there's a problem, we can respond to it quickly, and I think that's what government ought to do. Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant.
Yes, we met the City Schools Committee, we met last Friday, and had a good discussion, and talked about some of the projects going on, talked about the high school's, the gym getting a new roof, and how that's coming along very well. Monterey School is open and going, and there's more work to be done this coming, I believe, spring or summer, but things are going along quite well when it comes to the construction. The junior high, they're just getting going on that. There's going to be a committee looking at the educational needs of buildings when that is whatever turns out to be on that property. It has to meet certain educational things have to be met. So there's going to be a group of committee put together for that. And actually, I'm going to be part of that committee, so I'll be able to have some input and be able to bring more information back to you on that. But the most important thing that came out of our meeting was actually the light. You had all received an email. The council received emails about the lighthouse. It's lighthouse. The reality tour for light. Did you? And what that is going to be? And the reason I want to say this now is because it's going to be on May 4th and 9th prior to our next meeting. So I want to make sure that everyone that has not received emails or information understands what this is and knows about it. So the Atascadero Unified School District students grades 6 through 12 have an opportunity to participate in Reality Tour. Reality Tour is a drug prevention program that will bring the reality of drug addiction to students and parents. This event is sponsored by the Atascadero Greyhound Foundation, Lighthouse, the Lighthouse Project. Minors must be accompanied by an adult and have signed parent permission. This event is being offered twice, and participation is limited. So you need to register soon, and the phone number is 462-4350. The reality tour will be held Saturday, May 4th at 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. here at Atascadero City Hall, and then again on Thursday, we would never do drugs. And here's the reality from that in 2010-2011, These statistics are from 11th graders at Atascadero High School. 64% used alcohol or other illegal drugs. 62% consumed alcohol. 42% smoked marijuana. 11% used inhalants to get high. 5% used methamphetamine. 4% used heroin. And 12% used LSD. And the more shocking, that's shocking, but here's from the 2010-2011 group of students, 7th graders at Atascadero Junior High and the Fine Arts Academy, they reported 23% used alcohol or other illegal drugs. So that is shocking. And once again, the reality tour, the phone number is 462-4350, Saturday, May 8th, Thursday, May 9th. Call for accurate times, and it will be here at Atascadero City Hall. That is for the city schools. I'm going to defer the Finance Committee to Councilmember Moreno, and I will also defer my League of California Cities report for that was prior to the last meeting. I'm going to wait until this Friday. I'm going for another meeting with League of California Cities in Moore Park, And we'll combine the two of them, and I'll report on that next our next city council meeting.
Thank you. Councilmember Fonzie.
I just need to report that an executive committee board has been formed by the Air Pollution Control District. We will meet for the first time on May 1st. This will be the chairman and vice chairman and the director to put together the agenda and have some direction to the Air Pollution Control District director. I was invited to go on a tour of the Oceano Dunes by State Parks to get their viewpoint on the dust and sand pollution on Napomo Mesa. So I got to ride around in a four-wheel drive that went up and down sand dunes like I've never been before. It was pretty fun. End of report.
Well, thank you. Councilmember Kelly.
I went on that tour, too, and it's pretty impressive, since I didn't have to buy a big four-wheel drive truck to do it. Would you want to report on Taco Bell? You can do that. You. Design Review Board met with the new owners of Taco Bell, and they're going to do a complete rehab on Taco Bell, both the outside, the inside, and they're going to improve the parking and the drive-through. And when they start, they'll be closed for about 3 weeks, but I think it'll be a beautiful improvement. They're going more.
Well, but I mean, like nothing you've ever seen before. I mean, it looks like a program you would buy from a professional company to put together a budget, but she's done a great job. And to see the way she's really, you know, trying to do the best that the city can with our goals of containing costs and giving those budgets to the department heads and letting them know here's the number you're aiming to not go over, and they have a very clear indicator in that spreadsheet if they do go over. I've never seen that before. So that process is ongoing right now. If departments have some particular expense that sends them over, they submit a supplemental, and that'll be looked at for approval, which is, of course, is not taken lightly, but things do need to get done. And so if there's an expense that comes up that doesn't meet that budget, you know, they've got to look at a way to get that approved. So we're in that process. We have another meeting coming up in another week and a half here, so we'll keep you posted.
Very good. Well, it's true. Wade's not particularly afraid of us, but he is afraid of Rochelle. Everyone is afraid of Rochelle if they go over budget. So good keeper of our finances. Thank you. Any other individual determinations or actions by council or staff? Seeing none, we are adjourned. I just...